All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away, huh. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight, feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tea.
All right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate. How you doing, Patty? Patty's just walking by the studio. I can see. We're the studio that we use. We don't use the same studio that Patty uses. Patty and almost everybody else uses Studio A, which is the East Studio.
Yeah, for the most part. Yeah.
And we use Studio D, which is the West Studio. And there's a window where I can see into the offices and the hallway leading down the and in the hallway. And people walk past the window all the time in studio or in the offices. And I can see them walk out through the window. And I just saw Patty and her friends walking through. Always good to see Patty. Yeah. So we're here till 5 a.m. It's Nick DiGilio. How's it going, everybody? It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. That would be one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And, hey, coming up in just a few minutes, our good friend Rod Pyle is going to join us. He's great, man. He's one of my favorite guests. He's a regular guest. He is a space expert. Is really a fascinating guy. He's a speaker and an author, and he's got two fabulous books about space, that are, one is out already and one is coming out. And, we're going to talk with Rod about that and, any and all, space related, news stories. Rod's a great guy, and you can check out his information over at pylebooks.com, P-Y-L-E books, pylebooks.com. So we'll talk with Rod in just a few minutes. So, Captain Marvel opens, technically it opens tonight, but, you know, opening weekend, and it's expected to be the biggest movie of the year so far, and it's Brie Larson is the lead in it, and I'm very excited to see it because I kind of like Brie Larson, just a little bit. Anyway, and it, she just looks like she's going to kick some major ass in this movie, but the reason I bring it up is because it's a period piece. The movie takes place in 1995. I wasn't aware of this till a couple of weeks ago, and I thought it was weird because the first time I saw the trailer, her character is an alien, and she crash lands into a blockbuster. And I was like, well, that's weird, into a blockbuster video? And then I thought to myself, well, this has got to be a period piece. Then I found out, in fact, it takes place in 1995. So it's smack dab in the middle of the 90s, so I thought we would talk 90s stuff this morning. So we've got some forgotten 90s teen TV shows. We got the biggest things that only 90s kids would appreciate, and the coolest things that you owned in the 90s. So we're going to bust back and do some 90s memories this morning in honor of the release of Captain Marvel. So get your 90s memories ready to go and call us up at 312-981-7200. We didn't get the brand loyalty yesterday morning, so we'll probably jump into that. We got some offbeat March holidays to talk about as well. So that's what's coming up on the show this morning. As always, phone lines and text lines, 312-981-7200, also for Triple Play Thursday, one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter, at Nick D Show, and stay connected with us on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Nick D Show. So that's what's coming up on the program this morning, and let me say hello to Ben Anderson, who is producing this morning. How you doing, Ben?
pretty good.
All right.
Pretty excited for 90s.
Yeah, so. Are you a 90s kid?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Well, I mean, I was born in the 80s. And,
yeah.
And I'd say I was in my prime in high school in the 90s.
Okay. So. All right. Well, there you go. So we'll talk about that coming up here and going back to the 90s. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. We promise not to play any Hootie and the Blowfish. I will.
Thank you.
Guarantee that. And we won't hear. What was the song from the girl with the glasses from Reality Bites? What the hell was her name? The song was in Reality Bites, and the singer had. She was just known basically for her glasses. And Ethan Hawke directed the video.
Lisa Loeb.
There it is, Lisa Loeb.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the name of that song?
It's what I think it's, Stay.
Stay, that's it.
Yeah.
We won't play that either. But we will have memories of the 90s flying all over the place. So if you were a 90s person, you enjoyed the 90s, we're going to bring that decade back to life a little bit later on. And you can thank Brie Larson. I'd like to thank Brie Larson in person, if that's possible.
I'll see what I can do.
Oh my god!
I'm a producer, not a miracle worker.
I've always thought she was great, and you know, I mean, she was amazing in Room. You know, she won the Academy Award for that movie, and she was amazing in that. And not only is she adorable, but she's a really terrific actress. But I got to tell you, the movie I fell in love with her, I think I'm in love with Brie Larson, was Skull Island. Was Kong Skull Island? Oh my god. Oh my god, did I love her in that movie. So that was the one. After I saw Kong Skull Island, I was like, oh, that Brie Larson, oh! And now I can't wait to see her knocking people around, and she punches old women on the train. Did you see that in the trailer?
I did.
Because it's an alien taking the form of an old woman, but she's punching an old woman in the train. I was like, okay, I'm going to watch this. So Ben's producing, and in the newsroom, filling in for Vic, is Roger Badish. Hi, Roger.
Well, hi there,
Nick. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic.
Good. Now, Vic is okay. He's not sick.
Yeah, he's like, well, he was. Yeah, he's in the other room now.
He's doing some work. He's working on something else. I don't know if you guys, can I tell? Can you ask him if I can mention what he's working on?
Oh, yeah, you can.
Okay.
Oh, sure.
I just want to make sure.
They're promoting it like crazy.
No,
sure.
I know, but he's got this mini-series that's happening right now on WGN that he produced along with Roe. It's about R. Kelly.
Right.
And so he had part three all ready to go because they're playing it throughout the day.
Right. Supposed to play five times today, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he worked on part three, but because this insane story continues to change and now he's going back to jail.
Right.
Vic had to completely change the episode and do updates, so he's working his butt off on the on the R. Kelly piece, which continues to be such an insane story. But because of that huge complication, he had to change part three. So he's working really hard on that R. Kelly special. So make sure you listen to it. I mean, he's going to be here all night working on it. So make sure you listen to it. So Roger's kind enough to be filling in this.
My pleasure, sir.
Okay, Roger. Thank you, buddy. Mm-hmm. All right. We are going to break in just a couple of minutes here. And Rod Pyle is going to join us, a really terrific guest. And we're going to talk all things space and about his two new good, great books. Our phone number again is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And you can also do your triple play the Thursday requests. One artist, three songs. Get them in now. 312-981-7200. Get ready to do all things 80s and all kinds of other cool stuff coming up right here on 720 WGN. All right, we'll take a break here. And then it's Rod Pyle, and we'll talk about his new books and some space stuff. 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. It's Thursday. That means Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. That's also the number for talk and text for anytime you want to jump in here. We're going to be talking 90s-related stuff, forgotten 90s teen TV shows, things that only kids of the 90s would appreciate, and the 25 coolest things that you ever owned in the 90s. The reason why we're doing this is as a tie-in to Captain Marvel, which opens tonight. a movie I'm really looking forward to, and it takes place in 1995, smack dab in the middle, so we thought we'd celebrate the 90s a little bit. We'll talk a little bit about brand loyalty and much more here, all coming up on the show. Right now, though, we want to welcome back to the show our good friend Rod Pyle. He is a space expert, speaker, and author, author of many books. He's got two new ones coming out that are sitting right in front of me, and they're beautiful. And we're going to talk about the two new books, plus any other and all related space stories. And let's welcome Rod back to the show. Hi, Rod.
Hey, Nick. How are you?
Good, good, good. It's been a while. It's been a while.
It's been a while, and since we last spoke, we've seen the advent of Ms. Captain Marvel.
Yes. I'm very excited about it. I mean, I happen to be a really, like, I have an unhealthy kind of obsession with Brie Larson. So...
So how could it be unhealthy?
No, it's not unhealthy. I just think she's lovely. And she's been making the rounds on the talk shows and just been charming and just wonderful. And I love her in everything. And I'm very excited to see this movie.
So have you seen any previews or anything? I haven't seen a bit.
Of trailers and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah. I think it looks terrific. I'm seeing it in IMAX on Saturday, and I'm very excited about it. So.
All right. Well, yeah. I envy you.
So I understand you're on the road.
I'm on the road. I left Southern California last week in 50-degree weather and got to Tucson for the Festival of Books, which was grand, 130,000 people and
many-filled
sessions for us authors, which are rare, and we appreciate those.
Incredible.
At 80 degrees, and then got to Des Moines, Iowa a couple of days ago for a conference here, and it was 7.
Ah.
Fresh, thin-skinned California boys, that's cold.
It's pretty cold, but you're missing some insane weather in California right now. There's been insane thunderstorms and unbelievable showcases of lightning. I mean, like, really spectacularly scary.
You know, and they have to do that while I'm gone, because I like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
My ex used to, like, run to the closet when there was thunder and lightning, but I had an experience in eighth grade where lightning struck the flagpole outside our junior high school and shattered the windows. It was about 20 feet from the window.
Wow.
You're sitting next to, I think. And, you know, nobody got hurt, but it was like, hey, that's scary. Ooh, that's kind of cool. There's just this little smoking stem on the top of the flagpole where the ball used to be.
Wow.
So I have a healthy respect. But, yeah, you know, I think I'm not a big believer in the whole end times thing, but this weather is a little out of control.
No, it's been crazy. I mean, it really has been. Here in the Midwest, we've had this winter will not end. Rod, it just will not end. I mean, we had wind chills last week, 10 below, and then 2.5 weeks ago, we went through the polar vortex with 50 to 60 below wind chill.
And that's the kind of thing where if you stand outside for 10 minutes and not completely bundled up, it'll just kill you, right?
Exactly right. And I mean, it just won't end. It's been a miserable winter here. I mean, we're March 6th, and we're not even at freezing right now. It's like 20-something degrees outside.
Well, my friend, we need to promote space-borne solar power. So we get those big satellites up there. We start beaming power down to the planet collected from the sun. Stop burning fossil fuels, and life will be beautiful.
I would hope that would happen. Give everybody the old background on Rod Pyle as we do every time we talk to you.
The Rod Pyle background. So I was born with the space age in the late 1950s, and was just that perfect age to grow up with the programs of the space race. So I watched the Soviet Union and United States battle it out for the dominance of the heavens, trying to get to the lunar landing. And I was just the right age to be able to sort of get engaged with the Gemini program mid-stride, and then really was just Apollo fanatic. And the sort of end cap to that, I guess, was earlier today, I did a panel here at this conference in Des Moines, and we had three Apollo astronauts there and a flight controller. So we had Walt Cunningham from Apollo 7, the first crewed Apollo mission, Jerry Griffin, who was flight controller for all the lunar landing flights, Fred Hayes of Apollo 13, of course, the guy who was shivering and suffering in the lunar module in the movie and in reality. And Al Worden, who was the command module pilot on Apollo 15. And I tell you, man, if you got to stand up and talk to four people who are going to be interesting for an hour, you really can't beat that crowd.
That's really amazing, man.
Everything I could do just to keep from shaking while I was talking to guys, because it was cool.
Well, you know, Buzz has written the forewords for your two latest books, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, he was very cool about it. So Space 2.0 was a book that I've been trotting around for a few years via my agent, who's a wonderful guy, and we'd gotten the interest of a number of publishers, but, you know, sometimes you have to get over that last hurdle of providing some risk reduction, and there was some concern about would the book earn out, and how would it sell, and all that. So I went back to the National Space Society, with whom I'd worked in various capacities for years as a volunteer, and said, would you be interested in underwriting this book? And a gentleman there named Stan Rosen said, yeah, I'll take a shot at it. So we raised some money. And Buzz is on our board of governors of that organization. So after we got the deal with Ben Bella Books and we're going along, we said, hey, what would you think about writing a foreword? Because we think it's an important book. It's forward-looking, next 20 years in space, really trying to, you know, look at the strengths of what we've been doing and where we're going. And he said, sure. So he wrote that, and then he also wrote one for my Apollo book that's coming out in April. So I am deeply indebted to that man.
By the way, I have both books in front of me, the Space 2.0 and the First on the Moon Apollo book. And one of the things about your books, besides them being like fascinating and well written, they are beautiful. Like it's, you know, this Apollo book is just absolutely beautiful. It's a beautiful coffee table book and great artwork in it and everything.
And both those companies, so that's Sterling, and then, as I said, Space 2.0 is Ben Bella. I feel like they really pulled out the stops this time. I think with Space 2.0, it's because they felt, and I feel, of course, as the writer, because you always do, that we had something special, because it's a really new area. There hasn't been that much written about, at least not in this way, the survey of new space and what's ahead. And on the Apollo book, you know, there's a lot of them this year. They reissued a couple of my old ones. Yeah. One of them I didn't even know they had reissued until somebody called and said, hey, your book's out again. And I went, huh, what? And, you know, all the other authors that have been writing about it over the years have got books out. So they wanted to find a way to sort of differentiate it. So visually, they went all out, and then I got a couple of stories and angles in there that haven't really been looked at much before, including talking to some of the kids of the astronauts on that mission. So that was a really fun thing. We talked about that before.
We're going to dive into your books a little bit later on, but we have some space stories, recent space stories that we want to get into. But I also want to ask you, speaking of Apollo, have you seen the documentary Apollo 11? It's playing in theaters right now here in Chicago.
So I haven't seen that one yet. I saw the trailer and it looks amazing. And because I worked on the Nat Geo one a little bit. Uh-huh. I didn't work on the one you're talking about.
Yeah.
And the Nat Geo doc, we were looking for anything in 35 millimeter, and it's very hard to find, and there wasn't much of it. And those guys grabbed it and just did a sensational job of retransferring it. The Nat Geo one that comes out in a couple of months is a different approach. It's a whole program. It's not just Apollo 11. But they set that one in the time, so there's no voiceover, no narration. It's all just straight stuff from as if you were there. So very different approaches, but I think those are going to be the real two capstone ones for the year.
Yeah. Well, that's very cool. I love the fact that the documentary of Apollo 11, it's playing in a bunch of theaters. It got a really nice big release, which is really, you know, really kind of unusual for a documentary. But I mean, it goes to show you just how important this mission was in history.
It shows you that. It shows you that they'd like to be considered for an Oscar.
Yeah.
Smart, you go to the theater. So the other one's going to be released in theaters, too. So, yeah, they'll be head-to-head this year.
That's great. That's really great. I didn't get to see it over the weekend this past weekend, but I'm planning on seeing it. I review movies here on Monday mornings with two other film critics, and one of my other colleagues saw it and said it was just terrific. He really, really, really enjoyed it, so...
It's great, you know, and as I was talking to those four guys today, the astronauts and the flight director, I had to say, I felt kind of like an idiot saying it, but I said, you know, you guys, we're almost as far away from the Apollo 11 landing as it was for the first flight of the Wright brothers. It won't be too many more years before we're equidistant. And the further away I get from that experience, which I had when I was 11 years old, I guess, it's almost harder for me to believe it ever happened.
Right.
Because it's still hard with today's technology. When you think of what they had then, it's just mind-numbing, A, that it worked, and B, that we never lost anybody in space, at least not till the shuttle, and that they pulled that off. I mean, it was just operating on the thinnest of margins, on the very edge of what was possible, and... This kind of a film really brings that back.
That's how I felt when I watched First Man. When I was watching First Man, I felt that, my God, how did they do this? How was this accomplished? And I thought that was brought beautifully to the screen in First Man.
Now, I'd like to say something about First Man. So you and I have talked about First Man.
Yes.
So. You know what I think? So I was on a panel. Actually, it was interesting because both in Tucson and here in Des Moines, Jim Hansen was at both of these events. So we got a chance to hang out for a few hours. And Jim Hansen wrote First Man and co-produced the movie.
Right.
But I said, Jim, I haven't seen you for a while. I have a bunch of questions. He kind of grinned and said, yeah. And I said, first of all, you know, Buzz? And he said, yeah, that was a little rougher in the movie than it was in the book.
Right.
And I said, but okay, that aside. So the tone of the film, you know, the book is pretty neutral on Neil in terms of tone because it's not that kind of book. You know, it's a biography, but it doesn't go into that kind of emotional tone.
Right,
right. I said, I felt like the movie was not tonally ponderous, but dark. It really dwelt on the death of his daughter and really showed him to be almost a dark character. And I said, you know, you spent 55 hours interviewing him, which was extraordinary.
Yeah.
Nobody else had done that.
Right.
You know, I just know him for the downlink and the interviews and so forth. And I said, but he seemed to be a much lighter person than that. The other astronauts I know that spent time with him said that he was almost jocular. You know, he's quiet, but he was very engaging, had a great sense of humor, was a lot of fun. And if you listen to the downlink from the Apollo 11 mission, he was having a great time up there, and so was Buzz. And Jim said, yeah, it was a directorial great creative choice. And he said it was a certain story, but it wasn't the one I wrote. And I thought, okay, well, that's fair.
Yeah. Well, it's Hollywood. You know. You've worked there, Rod.
Yeah, not on movies like that, but just on other stuff. And,
right.
Yeah, you take creative licenses. I mean, one thing I hate in documentaries is when they start messing around with the facts. That's really not good. So I'm looking forward, I hope, to a couple of accurate Apollo 11 movies here.
All right, and we're going to talk about your Apollo 11 book a little bit later on, but we got to take a break here, Rod. When we come back, we got some news stories to talk about, space-related and all that cool stuff. Hang on, Rod, okay?
All right,
there you go. Rod Pyle is with us, a space expert, author, speaker. He's the best, written a ton of books, and we've got two right in front of me that are fantastic, and we'll talk more about that as well. We got to take a break for the news here on 720 WGN. More with Rod Pyle after that. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we are here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Thursday. It means Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We are going to be talking a bunch of 90s topics, a lot of fun 90s topics in honor of the release of Captain Marvel, which takes place in 1995. Excited to see that decade come back to life. We'll jump into that later on. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Facebook.com/Nick D Show is a great way to stay connected as well. Our guest is our good friend Rod Pyle, who is the author of many books. He is an expert on space, speaker, author, all kinds of cool stuff. And we got some space-related stories to talk about, and we're going to dive into his two new books as well. And here's Rod Pyle. Hi, Rod.
Yeah, hello.
All right, welcome back. SpaceX was in the news again a couple of days ago. It's really funny. I just had, Rod, I have you on. You're a regular guest, usually like monthly and stuff. And I have a car expert named Tom Appel who joins me once a month. And so we get to talk about Elon Musk in two different ways. When Tom's on, we talk about the car angle. And when you're on, we talk about the space angle. So we get to cover the two big angles of Elon Musk. And Tom actually was on earlier this week. So we can talk about Elon Musk from this angle now. So SpaceX... SpaceX made the news big time a couple days ago.
Yeah, so finally launched this long-awaited test of the Crew Dragon on the Falcon 9, and this is the space capsule that we hope will return an American capability to carry our astronauts up to what is largely our space station. And very successful. Launched on time, which isn't something we're used to seeing with complicated human-rated spacecraft like this. Made it up the space station, docked autonomously, which is something that we were looking forward to. Because up till now, when SpaceX has launched these cargo missions, they would go up and rendezvous with the space station, get grabbed by the Canada arm, and then brought in and berthed that way. This actually flew right up, docked without a hitch, and the astronauts are able to go inside and remove stuff, and a little plushy toy floated out because it's SpaceX. And they do cool things like that.
Right.
And so far it's going well. So within a few months, hopefully by the beginning of summer, we should see the first flight with a crew. The one thing that still got a few people concerned and I was chatting with some of the astronauts today about this, was that SpaceX has this unique fueling method for their rockets that United Launch Alliance and Boeing, who is the competitor that's going to be launching very soon as well with their Starliner capsule, that's a traditional thing where you fuel the rocket and it sits there and stabilized and ready and everything checks out. Then the astronauts go and they launch. On the Falcon 9, to get a little more power, they super chill this fuel, which means they have to put it in at the very last moment to prevent excessive boil-off and so forth. So the crew gets in the rocket, and then they pump the fuel in. And as you remember, a couple of years ago, they were doing that, and the rocket exploded on the pad because delamination in a tank of helium inside one of the fuel tanks. Now, supposedly that's been addressed, and everything's been cleaned up and fixed. And at least in theory, had there been a crew in there and had the abort system on the capsule been armed, it would have taken off before that explosion would have killed anybody. But we don't know. And that's microsecond timing. You know, that's got to send something right away. Yeah, and then you are popped off of there in a great big hurry and people can get hurt and so forth. So don't want that to happen. So looking forward to more tests. But this is a huge milestone. And if we could just... You know, Elon and one other guy in our government, if we could just get them to tweet a little bit less, we would see a little less news on them, and they wouldn't get in trouble with things like the SEC.
Yeah.
Yeah, why, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And we would, you know, it's funny because on the car angle, Tesla's been taking some hits lately, too, you know, in that regard. You know, they're closing down the actual, they're closing down, like, a bunch of the actual...
Stores, right?
Yeah, the stores. And you know, because they're convinced that people will buy cars just online, which I just find very, very strange.
Have you been to a Tesla showroom?
Oh, no, I have not.
So I finally went in with my girlfriend a while ago, and I said, you know, she doesn't like looking at cars because, you know, she doesn't. It's a guy thing, right?
Right, right.
But we were walking through past an old town. I said, let's check it out. So we go inside. And it does make quite a statement. I mean, I like the idea of Teslas. I've seen them on the road, but to be able to go in and get a tour of the inside of that thing, see all the little details that they got right inside and out.
Yeah.
But then you sit in it. This is a Model 3, and you've got what we would have in the old days called a color TV sitting in the middle of the console. And the design of the software that operates the thing is what really blew me away. So, for instance, air conditioning vents. What do you do on most cars? Well, you got a little roller valve, and then you aim it the right direction.
Right.
This one has an image of the air conditioning vents on the display screen, the video screen, and you just, you sort of swipe your hand across to the direction you want the air to go, and then it illustrates it following your fingers, and the next thing you know, you got air blowing in your face.
Wow.
You know, not having a showroom... risky choice, but he's a risk taker and a thrill taker.
He is. And you know, it's funny because you know, our car expert Tom has been to a Tesla showroom and he says it's pretty cool. He thinks it's pretty cool. So
yeah, it really makes a statement that I don't think you can make online, but
yeah.
You know?
Hey.
He's fooled us before.
He has. So what's next for SpaceX?
Well, like I said, they in a few months they're gonna get their first crew up there.
Mm-hmm.
And about the same time, we should see, and I haven't seen news on this lately, but they had their subscale version of the Starship, which we used to call BFR, the Big Falcon Rocket.
Right, right.
Before that, we called it the Interplanetary Colonial Transporter, and before that, we called it Elon's Madness, you know?
Right, right.
So they have a subscale version of that. They switched from composites to stainless steel. And that's something that you see in private industry, especially with SpaceX. They're very nimble, and they make these switches very quickly. And the last thing I had heard, it was going to be made out of composites, and then bam, you see this big stainless steel thing with rivet all over it, and you go, oh, looks like a science fiction rocket. Oh, that's the BFR, okay. Got damaged in a windstorm, and they're fixing that, and that will fly probably in about 3 to 4 months if they stay on schedule. And that's just a hop test. But when I say just a hop test, I mean it goes up quite far and then comes back down vertically, so it tests the liftoff and landing. And if that's successful, then within a couple of years, we should see full-scale testing of the BFR. And that, Starship. And that not only leads towards lunar flights and heavy cargo up to orbit and great reusability and incredibly economies of scale and all that, but also this thing we've talked about before, which is point-to-point going from L.A. to Shanghai in a matter of hours, you know. So I think 39 minutes or something.
Wow.
And he claims at what would be about the same as a first class ticket today. And I just read also that Virgin, which we're going to talk about because they've had another test flight,
yep,
has made a deal with a company, I think, called Boom Technologies to start building smaller versions of what you might consider to be an updated Concorde to do supersonic flight point-to-point from places in the United States to Asia and Australia and so forth. So, you know, this could be a whole new era of aviation. Going to be a little tougher because you're talking with the FAA. This isn't accepting high risk for space flight. This is commercial air transport, and that's a whole different set of rules. So that'll be an interesting conversation.
Yeah. Well, listen, you mentioned Virgin Galactic. Let's talk about that. Something big happened just this past week.
Yeah, so it was on the 22nd of February. They had another test flight. First time they've carried more than just two pilots. So a woman who's their head astronaut trainer went on it, and they reached Mach 3, which was a record, and they got up to the altitude they wanted and were able to have the woman passenger unclip and kind of drift around the cabin like the passengers in the future are supposed to do if you paid your, I think now it's $250,000 for the flight, Gulf.
Right.
And she's able to try the various restraints and make sure that nobody's going to get hurt and see how that was going to work. And then, of course, they did their wacky reentry with that tail that folds up. It's called feathering to slow it down and aim it in the proper trajectory.
Right.
And it went really well. So, you know, they're building up this very constant cadence of test flights. Still just have one finished vehicle to work with, but assuming everything goes the way they want, they're working on at least one more, possibly two. And, you know, they hope to have a fleet of these things deployed globally for both recreational use and research. They've got a couple of small contracts with NASA for doing short-term microgravity flights and things like that. So, you know, they're moving ahead, and God bless them. I mean, Branson was predicting this in 2007 and 2009 and 2013, 2015, and kept saying it's close, it's close, it's close. And George Whitesides, who's the president of his company, kept saying, you know, let's just stop giving dates. We'll get there when we get there.
Right, right.
And he used to run the National Space Society, so he's somebody we all know and love, and really smart, wonderful guy. And he said, you know, we just need to really keep at it, keep our nose to the grindstone, and just get it right, you know. And they're a small operation, and, you know, nothing on the scale of SpaceX, so they're just chipping away at it. And I think in the next year, year and a half, we'll see some revenue flights coming.
There you go. Okay, it's Virgin Galactic. All right, Rod, hang on, okay?
You bet.
All right, we got more space stories to talk about with Rod Pyle. You can check out pylebooks.com, P-Y-L-E books, pylebooks.com. And he's got two new books, one coming out in April, one that's out now, and we'll talk about those as well. Much more to talk about with Rod Pyle right after this. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here till 5 a.m. It's Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs. Get your requests in now. Play them later. 312-981-7200. My guest right now is Rod Pyle, space expert, author, speaker. Written a bunch of books. He's got two new ones, one that's out right now, one that comes out in April, and we'll talk about those. And we always talk about some space stories. So let's get back to our conversation with Rod Pyle. Hi, Rod.
We are back. Hi there.
Hi. So the first mole on Mars had a little had a little issue.
Yeah, funny way to put it. Yeah,
yeah.
The Mars InSight lander set down last year, started operations this year. Seismometer was one main instrument to measure Mars quakes, and that was deployed and just slowly being calibrated and was showing solid results. So that's happy. The second instrument, the mole, which is a heat flow experiment,
mm-hmm,
is another package they set down the surface with a robotic arm, and it's supposed to unspool a 16-foot-long mechanical rope, basically, a tube, that has a self-hammering armature in the end of it, and is supposed to whack itself down on the surface to, they hope, a depth of 16 feet. So they got down about a foot and a half, I think, almost 2 feet, and hit a rock, which they, you know, they expected that would happen. There's a lot of rocks on the surface, even though it's mostly softer soil. So it did what it was supposed to do, diverted around that, and then nudged up against another rock. And at that point, they had reached their four-hour limit for a single hammering session and decided to call it quits and run some simulations and try and figure out if they're doing the right thing. So it's deep enough now that it can start doing some of its work. So half of the experiments it does, or half of the experimental process, is sending out heat pulses from that tether, that mole, and seeing how they dissipate in the dirt to give them a better idea of the soil dynamics below the surface, hopefully more than a foot, ultimately. And then once it's fully extended, assuming it does get fully extended, it goes passive and measures the heat coming out of the planet, which tells you a lot about the makeup of the planet, the core, how temperature flows out of the planet tells you a whole lot about its structure. You know, there could be a lot of rocks down there. I don't know how much further they're going to get, and it's got to be a real nail-biter for those guys because they've been working on this almost $900 million mission for a long time. And yeah, they knew it was high risk, but we hope it'll work. You know, if not, maybe they can move the thing and try again.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, let's get into your I want to talk about your books before we run out of time. You mentioned Space 2.0 and the book First on the Moon, which is the Apollo 11 50th Anniversary Experience. Again, both books have forewords by Buzz Aldrin. Let's talk about Space 2.0. You've talked a little bit about it in the past. What are some of the things that you wanted to get across with this one?
I think, you know, if I had to put it in a nutshell, it's an attempt to write a layman accessible handbook for the new space age. So we had our first space age, which lasted from 1957 till arguably the end of the shuttle era, which is 2011. And we accomplished a lot. We got some of the heavy lifting out of the way. We picked the low-hanging fruit, you know, pick your metaphor. We got first missions to the moon and so forth. And now it's time for that next big step. And we've been in for the last handful of years, flying with the Russians, continuing with the space station. We call that sort of Space 1.5. I think the breaking point for 2.0 for me, this is arguable, was the launch of the Falcon Heavy, because we got this kind of eccentric billionaire who said, I want to build rockets. I want to change the way we fly rockets. I want to change the way this market works. Jeff Bezos, same thing, actually started a little earlier than Musk. And these two guys are really changing the dynamics of this industry in so many ways, especially in including the fact that they're forcing the old-school aerospace contractors like Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman and so forth to kind of reevaluate the way they've been doing business and get more competitive and get a little leaner and meaner. And it was time for that. So this is going to allow so many things to happen. If you make access to space cheaper, you start getting more material up there and ultimately more machines and more people to do necessary and interesting things. And then when you start being able to put some infrastructure up there, which is another thing the book looks at in some depth, orbital tankers, you start utilizing resources on the moon to mine water ice and metal and get oxygen out of the rocks, which you can do, and so forth. Now, this is all stuff you don't have to carry up there at great expense and effort anymore, and you can start really achieving things. You can build machines there to go further. You can build habitats. You can get people up there doing things that only people can do well. And this is really a new era, and it happens cheaper and more effectively than it has ever happened before. So that's what we're talking about.
Are you obviously these developments have been pretty amazing. As someone who's been following the space program for as long as you have, this has got to be sort of a renaissance period, right?
It is, you know, and there's been a long period of frustration, which started as the Apollo missions were winding down. And back then, you know, if you were a young adult listening to that, you were told we were going to have Mars in 10 years. And I was talking again to those Apollo astronauts today, and they said, look, we thought the same thing. You know, we drank the Kool-Aid, and we thought we were going to be out to Mars and developing the asteroid belt and have a base on the moon and so forth. And it all kind of stopped. And part of it was because we ran out of the political willpower. We weren't pushing against the Soviet Union anymore. We don't really have another superpower. Arguably, China could fit that role ultimately, but hopefully we'll be in cooperation or at least competition with them instead of just being arch competitors. And Apollo was kind of a closed-end program. It was designed to get to the moon quickly, do that research, and that was kind of it. And it couldn't do a whole lot else well, at least not the way NASA wanted to use it. So now we're seeing these robust, less expensive, more generalized rockets and spacecraft and systems that will be able to do a variety of things. So, for instance, there's a spacecraft called Zeus, which is going to be flown by ULA, which was able to go up and park in orbit, ACES, sorry, not Zeus, and stay there. And then it's refuelable, and it can be flown back and forth between the Earth and the Moon and do all kinds of tug duty to various positions between those two bodies and perform a lot of tasks that we haven't been able to do affordably. We had to launch a whole rocket for that. Now we can just get up to orbit, transfer the cargo over to this thing, and it'll just act as a space tug. So you start bringing in that kind of infrastructure again. It's kind of a boring word, but it's very important.
Yeah.
And this really does open up a whole new era of things that we can do.
Wow, that's really great. Now let's talk about first on the moon. Let me ask you this: there has to be there's going to be some amazing events happening on July 20th, right? Are they scheduling all kinds of celebrations and stuff?
Oh my lord, yeah. I mean, just the ones I know of. I know that Buzz Aldrin has something going in the Reagan Library in California about that time. National Space Society has a fundraiser gala going on that same in June, I think, in Los Angeles at the Beverly Hilton. There's going to be the Aldrin Family Foundation is doing one in Florida. Those are just the three I've heard of. I'm sure there's at least 5 or 10 others of equal scale and probably many small ones. The U.S. Mint has put out a really cool coin that I just saw today that's got the convex surface on one side of Aldrin's helmet from that famous photograph.
Sure.
And a concave crater on the other side. Beautifully done. So, you know, the media and the country is going to kind of go nuts about it for the year. I mean, these anniversaries really should continue till 2022, but I think it'll taper off pretty quick after July.
Yeah, it's going to be, I mean, I would imagine that on July 20th or like the week of that, you probably couldn't find a cable channel that doesn't have something Apollo related. That would be like a special of some kind.
Yeah, there's a bunch of those. CNN's got stuff in the works. I think Time does also. But in addition to that, there's two other things. One is, I don't know who's doing it, but I heard just the other day that there's going to be a media outlet online that's going to be showing the recordings from the mission, vis-a-vis news and the moonwalks and so forth, as they actually happen,
timed out
so that it peaks on July 20th, which would be really cool.
That's cool.
That is cool. And then the magazine I edit at Astra will be coming out in a publicly available edition that is going to be, and there will be other magazines, of course, but this is the one I think will be best.
Right.
It's all Apollo 11 and associated stuff. So I got a bunch of stories with some really skilled writers, and we've got an augmented reality component and so forth. So that'll be neat. And of course, you'll get copies of that.
Awesome. That's great.
Because you're a friend of the family.
I appreciate that. Before we let you go, as I mentioned before, this is a really, First on the Moon is a really just a gorgeous coffee table book. Where did some of these images and these pictures and illustrations come from? I mean, wow. I mean, you really went out of your way here.
Well, it's my job, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of them are on the Hi-Rez archives online. Then there were a huge release of previously unposted photographs that you could have found if you riffled through the archives, but a lot of them were, you know, an accidental exposure of a moon boot or a crooked horizon or something. So I hired a graphic artist to go in who was experienced with space imagery and grab a bunch of those that were otherwise unusable and composite them together and even them out and adjust the color temperature and make them beautiful. So I think there's 12 of those in there. So they haven't been seen in that context. So that's kind of exciting. And then, as I said, I got some other photographs that I had from my own personal collection and people that I knew. So, it's a deep dive into the subject. And then I think my favorite part, though, was, and we've talked about this on air before, was talking to the kids.
Yeah.
Both the Armstrong and Aldrin boys, and having Andy Aldrin tell me that his main concern when his father was on lunar surface wasn't about his health and welfare, but was that he didn't want him to trip over one of those cables and embarrass him in front of his schoolmates. And I thought, you know, that sounds like a teenager. That sounds like my teenager. So, yeah why not?
That's
so that
great.
Was cool.
Yeah, very, very cool. It's a great book, man. Really, really beautiful. What's the actual
date?
It comes out in April, correct?
April 2nd.
Okay, April 2nd. First on the Moon, and you can get all the information at pilebooks.com. Again, you did a great job, Rod. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Stay warm there in Iowa.
I'll do my best. You stay warm there in Chicago, my friend.
Thank you, buddy. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Take care. Thanks.
Okay, cool. There, Rod Pyle. Anytime we talk space, we talk with Rod Pyle. He's a speaker and a great author. His two new books, Space 2.0, available now, and a beautiful coffee table celebration of the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 mission, First on the Moon. A really, really beautiful book. Check out all the information for this and more at pylebooks.com. That's P-Y-L-E, pylebooks.com. All right, we'll take a break for the news right here on 720 WGN.
I'm ready.
Welcome back, everybody. I got no problem with three ZZ Top songs. No problem at all.
That's my thought, too.
Who requested ZZ Top for Triple Play Thursday?
That was from John in Indiana.
Thank you, John. All right, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man! Gets kicked off. It's one artist, three songs. Your request. We'll play them later. Get them in now. 312-981-7200. It's Nick DiGilio here. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. We're going to talk all things 90s. First of all, sort of forgotten teen TV shows from the 90s. Now, the general question is, if you were, you know, a teenager in the 90s, and you were, Ben.
Correct.
Which makes me feel very old, because I was... in my late 20s and early 30s in the 90s. Okay. So, anyway, 312-981-7200, I want to jump into that. But I do want to tell a quick story about that song, LaGrange, that we just played.
Oh, please do.
I directed this show called White Trash Wedding and a Funeral. And it was a real big hit. Late night show at the Factory Theater is a real big hit. And it was originally written as a two-act. But I wanted to combine it into a one-act, because the show is just so... it is really... one of the most insanely vulgar things that's ever been committed to stage. The language is beyond compare. The actual bodily fluids that happen on stage and all the... I mean, it is as below belt as you can possibly get. One of the raunchiest things that's ever been on stage, and I am unbelievably proud of it. Mike Byer and Bill Havley wrote the script. So when I saw the script, and it was written as a two-act, I was like, we can't have an intermission, because we're going to lose half the crowd. People are going to leave. And so I want to make this a one act. So we shortened some of the scenes, but we needed, because the first part is the rehearsal dinner. The first part of the play is the rehearsal dinner, and then the second half of the play is the actual wedding, which leads to a funeral, because someone dies at the someone dies by dancing to the chicken dance too much. They have a heart attack and die. So so we have a funeral right on the spot. So it becomes a funeral right there. And every possible, like, white trash cliche that you can have is in it. And it was just completely over the top and insane. And it ended up running over 3 years. It was a massive hit. And when the Factory had their 20th anniversary celebration, they remounted White Trash. So my solution to fixing this into a one act, because the actors had to do costume changes, because they had to change from, you know, the rehearsal dinner, which was just, you know, T-shirts and whatever, because they're white trash, to whatever their costumes they were wearing for the wedding part. So we needed something in there to give the actors time. So I came up with this idea where the character of the who's actually like the minister, who's also the bartender, who's also a Vietnam veteran.
Oh, that's just beautiful.
He and the dumbest guy, a guy named Drew, it was just like the... if you take the dumbest character that's ever been portrayed in anything, and you multiply that by 1,000, you're kind of close to how stupid this guy is, this character.
Okay.
So he and the bartender, George, bartender, everybody runs off stage. I can't tell you what happens at the end of the first act, because it's not radio-friendly. But anyway, something happens. Everybody runs off stage except for George, the bartender slash... minister who is going to preside over the wedding, and Drew, the dummy. And they go, hey, and I had George say, hey, you remember that night that the last time that this kind of thing happened in the bar? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, that was the night of the karaoke contest, and we won first prize. And then we have a flashback. The lights go down, and we go up on a stage, and the lights come up, and then we perform the song from karaoke. It's a flashback to, like, the karaoke contest. So that was, that's how I wanted to fill the time. You know, I was like, let's do this karaoke thing where we'll just perform a song, and that'll give you guys enough time to change, and we won't have to stop the show, and people won't be able to leave. So that was the idea. So the song that I chose, and I purposely chose it, was LaGrange. Because, and I purposely chose LaGrange because there's barely any lyrics in it. So it's like, there's literally like three lines in the song, and that's it. And the rest is instrumental. And I thought, first of all, the song's a jam. And second of all, I played George for a while. I played George for about 2 years. And so I just loved performing, you know, LaGrange. But the thing is that I just thought it would be hilarious that these two idiots would pick a song for a karaoke contest that has like four lines in it, and that's it. And so, and then they end up winning another thing. So, and it would kill every night. It absolutely killed every night. And we would just go nuts, like during the guitar breaks and stuff like that. We would do all kinds of crazy stuff, and it would actually bring the house down. We would get like massive applause, and then the lights would go down, and that would lead to the wedding, the second part. So every time I hear LaGrange, I think that I need to be on stage dancing around with my friend Scott or my friend Matt, who played those roles, you know, at different Pines.
Did you get to sing the how?
Oh yeah, no, I did the whole thing. Awesome. I was the singer, and he was just like my backup. So better. I did the how. But then the rest of the song is just music, and so we're up there. So we're up there winning a karaoke contest by not singing anything. So. But I lip-synced to it. We lip-synced it. I didn't sing it. It wasn't like the karaoke, because there is no karaoke version of LaGrange. Yeah. So anyway, that always comes. White Trash Wedding and a Funeral always just pops right back into my mind as soon as I hear LaGrange. I think, oh wait, I should be on stage right now.
I'm going to make that my new goal. I want to find a place that has that.
I don't think you're going to find it, man.
I doubt it. But man,
I mean, because seriously, it's like there's like four lines in the song, and that's it. And that's the reason. I just
want to find the place where it's all professionals in there doing a karaoke bit.
We also had a big musical moment. We also had a giant musical moment in that play that used to go at, used to bring the house to people. The thing about that show was it was a late night show. It was disgusting. It was vulgar, and you could bring beer into the Factory Theater. So we would have rowdy. This was like the show times would be like at 10:30 or 11 at night, and people would bring beer on a Friday night or a Saturday night and just be blasted. And the show was only 70 minutes long, so it was you're in, you were out. Basically, because I had all my actors speak as loudly and quickly as possible, because that's comedy. Faster, louder. Those are the two rules of comedy. So the other moment was the first dance after they are married, the main character are married. Their first dance is, you know, everybody's, you know, all the characters, I think there were like 13 characters in the show. So it was a pretty big cast. They're all on stage, and the couple is going to have their first dance. So everybody's standing like around them, like in a semicircle, and they're half in the bag. Everybody's already pretty blasted. And so they're going to dance their first dance. And so, in the original script, it was Stairway to Heaven. And I was like, okay, that's, you know, that makes sense. White Trash Wedding then plays Stairway to Heaven for your first dance. But I changed it to Sister Christian. I was like, I think we should do Sister Christian. And so what we did was, the beginning of Sister, you know how Sister Christian starts, right? Night Ranger?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It starts out, you know, with the piano, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden it builds up to dun, 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 motoring, watch your price for flight. You know that part?
Yeah.
Okay. So everybody's just kind of standing there with their arms down, and they're kind of drunk, and everybody's kind of like being, oh, isn't this romantic? And then they start dancing, and all of a sudden at the motoring part, everybody just does the devil horns and starts going, motoring! And there's 13 people screaming that, and it would get a massive laugh, like, every night. And so, and then here's the weird thing about it, Ben, is that about 6 months or 7 months after White Trash opened, Boogie Nights came out. And I don't know if you remember the use of... I go see Boogie Nights, and I'm like, oh my God, great minds think alike, man. Because you have that Alfred Molina scene at the end, man. And then he's like, this is the best part. And it builds up to the motoring. And then I kept thinking to myself, you know, people are going to come see White Trash now who've never seen it before and go, oh, they ripped off Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
But it just so happened to be a coincidence that was used. But... So lots of music, lots of musical stuff that brings back White Trash.
Just those two songs. Yeah. I wish I could have seen it.
It was a fun show, man. It was disgusting. I mean, seriously, like, we would have people just get up and walk out. There would be people just like, okay, that's it. And I remember one night I was not playing George at the time. My friend Sean Abley was playing George. And so there's a part in the show where he goes over to, he's got a gigantic bottle of Jack Daniels, okay? And it's obviously filled with iced tea. He's got a gigantic bottle of Jack Daniels, and he walks over to the, like, the maid of honor, and who's all trashy, and he's like, how's it going? And he's like, I think we should go out to my El Camino and blah, 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 you know? So he stops, he's in the middle of talking, and all of a sudden George is supposed to drink the entire bottle of Jack Daniels. And it's like, it's the big yeah, you know, refillable jug of Jack Daniels. So one night, and this is late in the show, there was probably 15 minutes left in the show. So one night, Sean is guzzling the Jack Daniels, and it's really, there's no sound or anything. Like, everybody on stage is very quiet. It's just, the idea is to just watch Sean drink like 45 ounces of iced tea that's supposed to be Jack Daniels. So, and you're supposed to do it in a very cartoonish way, like really swig from the bottle, you know. And so while he's in the middle of chugging the Jack Daniels, suddenly three people get up and go, let's go, let's go, let's go. And at the Factory Theater, you're on stage. If you walk on the aisle, hit a middle aisle that led right to the stage, and then you'd have to cross the stage to go back outside. So these people basically, like, and everybody saw them, like everybody in the audience saw these people leaving. So they got up and they're leaving, and they walk out. So they walk out, and everybody sees them leave, and nobody says anything. The cast never says, doesn't say anything, and they walk out. And then Sean finishes drinking the Jack Daniels. He burps, and he goes, you're going to miss the cutting of the effing cake, to the people leaving. So, yeah, we had walkouts. It was not for everybody. It was a show that was not for everybody. But it ran for a long time, and it was really funny. It was a lot of fun to do, too. Like, being in it was a lot of fun. We had, I mean, because it ran for so long, I can't even tell you the number of rotating cast members we had in that show. There were 13 parts. I think we had probably 50 people during the course of the years that show ran, just stepping in when people couldn't do it. But, yeah, it became a staple at the Factory. Anyway, so I don't know what that just. I just burned a whole segment on talking about White Trash Wedding and a Funeral, a show that closed like 20 years ago.
I was entertained. Well, and looking at the screen, I know Roger was entertained, Roger, too.
I love his reminiscences of his different plays and stuff. You ought to put a compilation of all your plays together. You know, seriously.
It's funny. I mean, I got a lot of these at home on VHS and a couple of DVDs. I've got like three copies of White Trash on VHS, which I don't, you know, what am I going to do? I don't have a VHS player. But anyway, one other quick theater story. We did a show. I co-wrote and directed this show called Here Comes a Regular. And it was kind of an autobiographical thing. I went through a really bad breakup, and it's about these five guys who go to comfort their friend who's going through a breakup, and they're at a bar, and it's just basically six guys in a bar drinking. So at one point, we did this at Stage Left Theater right in Wrigleyville, which is no longer there. But anyway, the theater itself, like the stage itself, the actual set looked exactly like a bar. My set designer, Daryl Miller, was unbelievable, and it looked like a real bar, to the point where people in the lobby, they would come in and think it was a bar. And that, like, this is pre-show, we can drink at the bar. People would be sitting at the bar. My stage manager used to have to go, this is the set. You can't sit on the set. And by the way, those beer taps don't work. Beer's not going to come out. Nothing's going to come out. So just sit down. So we'd have to tell people it was realistic. So we found out that there were these four guys who saw the show and they loved it. It was like one of the favorite things they've ever seen. So they like actually wanted reserved seats. And this is a very small theater, a really small theater. It's probably sat maybe 60 people. And the audience was right on top of the action. Like they were even lit by the stage lights. So, and we could see everybody in the audience. You know, when we were on stage, we could see everybody. So they reserved four seats, these guys, and there was a three row section on the left, on the stage left side. And so they wanted the top four seats in the middle of that section. So they reserve those seats. So these guys show up for their second viewing of it, bombed. Okay, they're annihilated. They are completely drunk, and they've got jugs of wine, jugs of red wine. Now, let me just say this. Sitting in front of these guys, you know, these four guys, is Steve Cochran and his mother. Okay, and he's in like the front row, and he's sitting in front of these guys. And they're bombed, okay? Now, they're not making a lot of noise or anything. They're not doing anything crazy until one guy passes out, okay, and we can see him passed out in the audience, and we continue to talk, and then, of course, I'm thinking to myself, okay, now, there's a tradition of, like, you pass out, sometimes if you're so drunk, you pass out, you wake up, you're going to puke. That's just what's going to happen. This guy passes out, he wakes up, sure enough, all over his shirt, all over the floor, and he gets up and he starts staggering and he climbs over Steve Cochran and his mother, who have to part like the Red Sea, and he staggers out, and the bathroom to the theater was through the quote entrance of the bar. So he had to go on set. He walks through the bar on in the middle of the play, bombed, vomit all over him, goes through the back door, and then goes into the bathroom. And so when that happens, I said to the guy playing the bartender, man, you really overserved him. And then we got a really big laugh out of that. But then people thought, oh, I guess we can all do that. So people started getting up and walking around and going to the back. And one guy went to the back, through the front door, off the stage, and was on his cell phone going, yeah, I'm at a play. Yeah, it's pretty good. And I'm like, this is in the middle of the performance. And that's the night Steve Cochran saw the show. Oh, that's man. The night that it was that performance when all hell broke loose after the puking guy ran through the stage, and I directed the show, and I was, you know, but I was in it too, and I was so angry. I was like, and Mike View, my buddy Mike View, was also in it, co-wrote it with me, came up to me at one point, and he goes, just keep it together, man. Let's just get through this performance. Don't go nuts. Because I was going to kill somebody. I swear I was going to kill. I was going to go backstage and start killing people who were, you know, the audience members who just got up and started wandering around. So anyway, and that's the night that Steve Cochran saw the show. He told me he liked it. I don't know.
Did he first think that all of that was part of the play?
Well, no, because no? It clearly wasn't. Yeah. It was a drunk audience member who staggered onto stage with vomit all over his shirt. That was not part of the script. But yeah, I told, you know, that was funny because that's a story that Steve and I have talked about a lot over the years, because this was back in, like, we did that show in the end of 2003, beginning of 2004, so it was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But Steve and I have talked about that night, and his mom liked the show, too. So I don't know, you know, but those are two of the, I mean, that story right there is probably the most insane of, like, audience participation stories that I've ever had, that we've ever had, that completely disrupted the whole show. And the end of the show is really sad. The end of the show is very melancholy and very, very sad. And I'm the last one on stage, and I have to do this, you know, like, pretty sad thing at the end of the... And I'm just like, I'm not acting at all. At this point, if something happens when you're on stage and the audience does something insane or something gets nuts, the idea is to get through the damn thing as fast as possible. At that point, just get the show over, you know? It's ruined, whatever. Just get the... And so the last, like, minute, which I usually, on normal nights, I would milk for emotion very shamelessly, because it's just kind of a sad moment. I was just like, yeah, it's sad, boom, then walk off stage. So, anyway. But anyway, all right, we have to break here, because I've been babbling on about my old theater stories. I swear to you, we're going to talk about them. Speaking of the 90s, we did a lot of those shows in the 90s. See, I'm trying to segue back into the topic. See,
good job.
And I said, well, that's why I've got a plaque across the river.
That's right.
So anyway, 312-981-7200. What were the shows that you watched as a teenager? And I'm going to start asking Ben real soon when we come back. And I've got a list here of some forgotten teen TV shows from the 90s. 312-981-7200. Yeah. Would you like to know at what point in Dazed and Confused this song comes on? Because I can tell you. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, Triple Play Thursday. Getting off to a great start with some ZZ Top. John, right, requested that?
Yeah, John from Indiana.
John from Indiana. Thank you, John. All right. I have time here to basically, once again, set up the topic, because we're going to have to hit the news in a couple of minutes because I was blabbing for such a long time. But we want to hear from you guys here. We're talking about 90s shows that you watched, like, as a teenager, if you were, like, a teenager in the 90s. Or if maybe you were an adult, but you watched 90s shows that were kind of meant for kids. For teens. What do you think? Give us a text or give us a call right now. Phone lines are open, 312-981-7200. Let me read the intro that goes along with this article that lists some of these forgotten teen TV shows of the 90s. Here was what it says. And by the way, we're talking about the 90s this morning because Captain Marvel opens tonight, and it takes place in 1995. So we thought it would be fun to go back and reminisce about the 90s. And Ben's younger than I am, much younger than I am. He was a teenager in the 90s. So we're going to talk about it from his perspective and all that cool stuff. So 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Here it says, oh, how we love the 1990s. The decade may have brought us some pretty cringeworthy fashion and beauty trends. most of us would like to forget. But if there's one thing the era got right, it was TV shows. It was the years of Friends, Seinfeld, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and Full House. Yes, it really doesn't get much better than that, but there were some TV series that don't get the recognition as much as the ones that were still mainstream. Sorry, Friends, but it's time to share the love a little bit. Every decade has some gems that got lost as time passes, but we're here to make sure that the classics of the 90s aren't completely forgotten. A lot of these TV shows didn't last for many seasons, but that really doesn't mean that they were any less enjoyable. From angsty teen dramas to feel-good sitcoms, the years of the 90s were packed with unbelievable television. It's making us realize we started our obsession with binging shows like we've never seen TV before. Would have been fun in the 90s. If it were up to us, we'd call this the golden age of teenage television. Today's teens might never know the joys of Sister, Sister, or Kenan and Kel. We have something to do about it. It's time to dig deep, and we mean deep, into the archives of 90s teen shows and start spreading the love. So let's all walk down memory lane and appreciate these 20 forgotten 90s teen shows. The only thing left to do is start petitioning to Netflix to put some of these babies up streaming. So that's the premise here, and we also want to hear from you about, and if you remember any of these shows that we're about to talk about, I would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text, and then we'll just talk about other shows that you watched in the 90s.
By the way, I may be way older than the two of you, but in the 90s, I had a 14-year-old daughter.
Oh, okay.
So the TV was on these shows.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we got a break. We got to hit the news here right after this, and then we'll hit the 90s teen TV shows. 312-981-7200. Only ZZ Top would make a song about TV dinners, and it would rock. ZZ Top, man. That's Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday! Get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. We'll play them later. You know that that ZZ Top used to actually bring live cattle out on stage.
Really?
Yes, they did. I remember Roy Leonard took two of his sons. I think it was Kelly and Colin. To see ZZ Top, and told the story. It was at the Auditorium Theater. Told the story about how when the curtain came up, there were like three cows on stage, like in a pen, and they actually played with like cattle on stage. So ZZ Top, only ZZ Top could get away with that. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. We're doing some 90s topics this morning in honor of Captain Marvel's release, a movie I'm really looking forward to, mostly because of Brie Larson. And it takes place in 1995, so I thought we would talk about that. Now, Ben, you were a teenager in the 90s, correct?
Correct.
What were some of the, before we dive into these 20 forgotten teen TV shows from the 90s, what was like high on your list of shows to watch?
I've got two that come to mind.
All right.
Clarissa Explains It All.
Yes, okay.
And That 70s Show.
Oh, That 70s Show was a big one for you. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That show was on for a long time, That 70s Show.
Yeah, eight or nine seasons.
Laura Prepon's birthday yesterday.
Was it?
Yeah. She's only 39. I thought she was older than that.
Donna.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, now, Clarissa Explains It All, she broke the fourth wall a lot, right, and talked to the viewers and stuff like that. Yeah. Who was the actress who was in that? Was that Amanda Bynes?
No, that was Melissa Joan Hart.
Oh, it was Melissa Joan Hart. That's right. And then she went on to Teenage...
Sabrina.
Sabrina,
yeah.
Right. Yeah, so that was a Nickelodeon?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was the opener when they started doing the SNCC, the Saturday Night Nick.
Oh, okay. That was the big opener. Yeah. You know what? Esmeralda is she's going to be 36.
Okay.
In April. And so when we would talk 90s stuff, she would just dive right into it. And she was terrified of the opening of Are You Afraid of the Dark? Like the opening credits, like, used to freak her out big time. She watched the show all the time. She loved it. It was one of her mainstays and her go-tos. But she, you know, she's like, that opening is like, and the images at the beginning of this show are really, really scary. So that was one of her favorites, the go-tos. All right, here's maybe someone, I don't know if you've heard of any of these, you let me know. Okay. And Roger, if you had a teenage daughter, maybe you have heard some of these.
We did tons of Nickelodeon stuff.
Yeah, I know. That was the big thing in the 90s.
Yeah.
If you were a teenager in the 90s, you watched a lot of Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
That was the thing, man. So, again, we want you to hear from you. Text, talk, 312-981-7200. What did you watch in the 90s? And even if you were an adult, did you watch any of those shows that were aimed at teens? And here are some forgotten ones. 312-981-7200. All right. Hi. Let's see if you guys have heard of this one. It's The Secret World of Alex Mack. Oh, you know it. Ben's shaking his head. The Secret World of Alex Mack is the first one that's listed here as a great show that's forgotten.
Yeah, I had a huge crush on Larissa Olenek. So.
That's who she.
She's the lead
because she's cute. They got a picture of her here on the in the article, and she is cute. With Nickelodeon reviving, Are You Afraid of the Dark? We really need to give it to give us back the Secret World of Alex Mack. Sure, we got four seasons of Alex Mack tackling life after an accident with a top secret chemical that gave her some interesting powers. What happened there?
You know what? I don't remember now at this point.
Okay.
Other than just the small pieces of the show.
Okay. Yeah. But she had some, it was a top secret chemical. She had an accident where they gave her some interesting. If anybody remembers The Secret World of Alex Mack, 312-981-7200. I do not remember that. Let's see. How about this? How about this? City Guys.
What? Even I don't remember that.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
City Guys. It looks ridiculous. The picture the picture looks ridiculous. Here, the minute we heard that C-I-T-Y, you can see why. These guys are streetwise. We knew one of our favorite shows, the moment was it was about to come on. I guess it must have had an interesting opening theme or something. City Guys followed two Manhattan High School students who were trying to stay out of trouble while causing it. Plus, the show star Dion Basco, whose brother, Dante Basco, was Rufio from Hook. Well, they're digging deep to find a connection of some kind.
There's a classic movie.
Oh, God.
Robin Williams.
I hate that movie.
Really?
Oh, my God. I almost walked out. I swear to God, I almost walked out. I'll tell you, the only thing that I came away from that movie was... This is how much, I mean, I just remember I hated it. I remember I absolutely hated it. The only thing that I my observation from that movie was who the hell, who was responsible, who drew the short straw and had to shave Robin Williams' back?
Ooh.
And his body.
Ooh, you thought of that?
Well, he's shirtless.
Well, I know.
And he doesn't have any hair. And Robin Williams was one of the hairiest men that ever lived.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, like, when he was shirtless in Hook... And he was clean, you know, there was no hair. I was like, what the hell? Who had that job? What poor schmuck had to shave Robin Williams' back? So that's the only thing that I remember about the movie. But I guess that Dante Basco's in it. City Guys. You should see the picture of this thing, man. It just looks ridiculous. Oh, 90s. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. All right, how about this one? Brotherly Love.
Why does that one sound familiar?
Well, it should. Do you remember it, Ben?
I remember the name.
Brotherly Love. Well, I describe it to you, and if you look at the picture, you'd be able to. You would remember it immediately. Fans of the once hit show Blossom might remember Joey Lawrence starring in a sitcom with his brother, aptly titled Brotherly Love. Though the show only lasted for 2 years, we got 40 episodes with Joey, Matthew, and Andrew about half brothers who come together after an accident claims their father's lives. Jeez. Yeah, that sounds like a happy premise for a sitcom. Yeah, that's Joey Lawrence.
Especially after Blossom.
Yeah. Yeah, Joey Lawrence right there.
Wow.
Joey Lawrence, who, by the way, got kicked out of Celebrity Big Brother after the third week. He lasted 3 weeks. All right. We got some texts coming in. 773, Nick, check out Brie Larson in Short Term 12. I did check Brie Larson in Short Term 12, and she's fantastic in it. She's great in that movie. 630 area code says, I played a Sega Genesis and a Game Boy Color. Boy, you're going back in time right there, the 90s. 224, the StarTAC Black Flip Phone. As a Star Trek, you get it. You have to have it if you're a Star Trek fan. That was in the 90s. 815 area code, 90s Michael Jordan and the Bulls. Yeah, it's true. Yep, it's true. 815 area code says sports pullover jackets. 815 area code also says 90s show Dream On. That was one of the first successful HBO shows. And it was very exciting because it was a half an hour sitcom with boobs. Brian Benben. Whatever happened to that guy? Brian Benben was the star of Dream On. Whatever happened to that guy? And the premise of the show was this guy would whatever he was dealing with in his life, he would deal with through old movie clips, like old black and white movie clips. And then there was boobs in it, and people were like, "Oh, that's cool."
He's married to Madeline Stowe.
He is?
Yep. And he's 62 now.
He's married to Madeline Stowe?
Yep.
That guy?
He, the Dream On, he was also Dr. Sheldon Wallace on the ABC medical drama Private Practice.
Oh, he was? Okay.
He also had his own show, the Brian Benben Show, in, looks like, 98.
Oh, yeah.
Brian Benben.
Yeah, it looks like he's just been doing off and on TV.
There you go. Well, listen, if I were married to Madeline Stowe, I'd be staying home, too.
Yeah, it looks like he had a one-off on Scandal. And
yeah, so he's just doing some periodic, sporadic TV work. 807 area code says, one show that lasted 80s, 90s, and 2000s was Degrassi. Oh, man, yeah.
The first one, though, not the second
one. There were a bunch of incarnations of it. When it was rebooted in the 2007s, in the 2000s, Kevin Smith couldn't wait to be on the show. He had such a crush on Caitlin. Kevin Smith was all nervous about working with her. The Next Generation also brought us Drake. And that's Canadian Bill, of course, Canadian Bill, telling us about Degrassi. The thing about Degrassi was, if you watch Degrassi, you know, the Degrassi High School show, you know, people would like it. Americans would watch it and then go, why did they say a boot? Because all the teenagers would have the Canadian accents, which, of course, is natural because they're Canadian. Linda says, there are several companies that will transfer VHS to disc or whatever medium you choose. Strongly suggest you transfer anything you have on VHS as soon as possible, because VHS tapes will fade. You may have a picture, but no sound, or vice versa. It doesn't take long. I just found out the hard way. In the meantime, I have an awesome VHS player that you may have.
There you go.
No, I'm good. I got enough equipment at home. I'm good. Let's see. 808 area code says, are you afraid of the dark? I know that one's going to pop up a lot, because that was a massively popular show among people around your age, Ben.
Yeah.
815 area code, 52-year-old man, and my daughters had me watch it, and it was a show called Raven. Oh, of course. I know Raven. Isn't it So Raven?
Yeah.
It was So Raven, right? Disney also, Hannah Montana and Lizzie McGuire, they're ingrained in my mind forever.
Was Lizzie McGuire the one where suddenly she became a cartoon during the show?
I do not know. I know Hannah Montana. Hannah Montana is Miley Cyrus.
Right.
I know that.
Yeah.
I don't know Lizzie McGuire, but I've heard the name. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. What did you watch in the 90s? And do you remember any of these shows we're talking about? Talk and text at 312-981-7200. All right, how about this one? Teen Angel. You remember Teen Angel?
I remember it. Never watched it, though. I just remember seeing the ads for it all the time.
Okay, listen. Listen to this. Listen to the premise. Are you ready for the premise of this thing?
It scares me.
This is the premise of Teen Angel. Eating a six-month-old hamburger, this teen dies and becomes his best friend's guardian angel. That's the premise. The kid eats a six-month-old hamburger and dies. Then he becomes his best friend's guardian angel. The show didn't last long, but boy, it was a fun ride while it was on the air. I think the people who wrote this stuff are drunk.
Well, it was Disney.
That was a Disney show?
That was a Disney show.
Disney is responsible for a show where a kid eats a six-month-old hamburger and dies.
Yeah, it was part of that, like, that mix, like, yeah. You know, ABC, Disney.
Yeah, well, Disney did kill Bambi's mom, so they're capable of anything. So
that's true.
All right, let's take a quick break here, and then we'll come back. 90s TV, what did you watch? We got some forgotten gems here, like Teen Angel, the story of a kid who ate a six-month-old hamburger and croaked. All right, let's take a break. Talk text, 312-981-7200. them, man. Do you think Whitesnake ever listened to Zeppelin?
I like to think so.
Well, they clearly did, just based upon that song. I love that song. I mean, it's just so it's you know what I'm saying. It is kind of a ripoff of Zeppelin, but you know that's what you get. All right, who requested that?
That was Scott from Streamwood.
All right, Scott from Streamwood. We get to hear two more Whitesnake songs. Yeah, man, Whitesnake. Yeah. All right. 312. Yeah.
Was there any Whitesnake in your play?
Hold on a second. We did a play called Among the Dead, in which I played an insane redneck zombie killer. It was a zombie apocalypse play, and it was one of the best plays I've ever.
I'm so not surprised at that.
Ryan Oliver, my friend Ryan Oliver, wrote and directed it. He wrote the part for me, and it's the best part I've ever had. I got to kill zombies and act like a lunatic and wear a sleeveless Schlitz shirt and a bandana and kill zombies with a machete. It was a dream come true. But anyway, we did not have any Whitesnake music in it, but one of the characters, this idiot character. Had a decapitated zombie dog head in a cage that was animated because it was a zombie. And he named it Whitesnake. So the dog's name was Whitesnake. There was a reference to Whitesnake in one of the plays we did. There was a zombie dog named Whitesnake in Among the Dead.
Fantastic.
So there you go. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, and we're celebrating some 90s stuff because Captain Marvel, which opens this weekend, takes place in 1995. So right now we're talking about some forgotten TV TV shows from the 90s, and we want to know what you guys used to watch TV-wise in the 90s. 312-981-7200. All right, let's see if you know this one. Swan's Crossing.
That one I don't remember.
Okay. It's from Hello Sphere Productions. I don't know if that helps anybody out.
No. Was that like a response to Dawson's Creek?
My guess is that this was before Dawson's Creek. Dawson's Creek was in the late 90s into the 2000s.
Yeah.
Okay.
This short-lived show followed the lives of 12 super-rich teens as they cause all sorts of trouble and mayhem in their hometown. Well, that sounds like a real charming show.
Oh, sure. A lot of family value.
A bunch of rich kids running around doing stupid stuff. The kid that they show here has some serious 90s hair, and he's wearing an Oakland A's jersey. I don't know what that means, but yeah. Well, Weird Science, the TV recreation of the classic 80s flick, surprisingly lasted 5 seasons in the 90s. It had the same premise of two boys creating a girl of their dreams on their computer.
Wasn't that on USA?
It looks like something that would be on USA.
I think it was.
Who played the girl? Because it was Kelly LeBrock in the movie. Can you look that up, Ben? Who played the girl in the TV version of Weird Science? I'm looking at it. I don't recognize her. But yeah.
It was enough for a movie. I wouldn't watch it for more than a movie.
Well, I mean, I hated the movie. Except for Bill Paxton. Paxton was great.
It was Vanessa Angel.
Oh, yeah, okay, good. Vanessa Angel from Kingpin.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also seen in Spies Like Us.
Yeah, she's in Spies Like Us as well. Yeah. Okay. All right. She had a career for a little while.
Yeah.
So the TV version of Weird Science is included on these great forgotten shows. What about this one? Oh, look at the 80s hair on this kid. Odd Man Out.
Man, I had hair like that.
Did you?
Good. Through my like freshman up to my sophomore year in high school.
Good Lord. Is that Marky Post? Can you look up, again, some of these...
Some of these are interesting.
Can you look up the cast here? Odd Man Out. Go to IMDb and check that out. A teenage boy lives with 5 girls. What could possibly go wrong? Hey, what's going on, teenage girl? Yeah! This show only lasted 13 episodes, so it's definitely one of the more easily forgotten ones. That looks like Marky Post to me.
From Night Court?
Yeah, it looks like her.
Yeah. It is.
It is? Okay. Who else? Anybody else? Who's the kid? With the hair?
Eric Von Detten.
I don't know why I'm laughing at that, but
I mean, it's fitting.
It's Eric Von Detten. I'm just looking at this guy's 90s hair and his shorts.
I will post the link to this list so all the listeners can see for themselves what we're looking at.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Marky Post. 13 episodes. Poor Marky Post. She was fantastic on Night Court. I loved Marky Post. Oh, now this one I know. I know this one, Sweet Valley High.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, made after the books.
That's not forgotten. Mm-hmm. That shouldn't be on this list. People know that show, right? Hell, if I know it, anybody would know it. Sweet Valley High, two twin sisters who couldn't be more opposites of each other live in Sweet Valley, California. The more mischievous of the siblings gets into all kinds of trouble. Sweet Valley High was definitely one of our favorite shows. Can you, Ben, can you look up the cast of this one, too?
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm looking at it. There's like eight people in this still, and they're all 80s, and they're all teens. Now, maybe they went on to some sort of fame or fortune, but I don't really recognize anybody from this. But I remember the show. I totally remember the show. Sweet Valley High.
Oh, get out.
Who's in it?
You know who played one of the twins?
Who?
Brittany Daniel.
No kidding.
Yeah. Brittany and her... And Cynthia Daniel.
Oh, because they were... They are. Yeah. God, that doesn't look like her.
No, not at all. She actually looks like she's gotten younger over the years compared to that
She's
photo.
A babe, Brittany Daniel. Oh, my God. You ever see the Club Dread?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I hate saying it, after Joe Dirt, I was a Brittany Daniel fan. Yeah.
By the way, I love Joe Dirt.
I do too.
I love that movie. I don't, you know, and I know I get a lot of crap for. I hated the second one. The second one was horrible. There was no need for the second one. I'm not even a David Spade fan, and I love Joe Dirt. I thought Joe Dirt was like a sort of like redneck kind of lowbrow version of Forrest Gump. That's because that's what it is. You got to name yourself. All right. How about this one? Hang Time. Good Lord, that's Dick Butkus.
That one,
yes,
I remember.
It is.
you remember Hang Time?
Yeah, when you said Dick Butkus, yeah, he was. I thought he owned a shop.
Well, here's what the premise is. It's just a one word premise. Look this one up too, Ben. Hang Time with Dick Butkus. See who else is on this thing. If we know anybody else, seven athletic high schoolers navigate their way through school and life on the Deering High School basketball team. That's the plot. And Dick Butkus is the only adult in the still. The rest of them are like teenagers, so he was probably like some sort of, you know, adult figure of some kind. Anybody throw some names out. See if they
Daniela Dutcher?
No.
How about Megan Parlin?
No.
I'm going to skip the ones without a photo because I'm pretty sure they didn't go very far.
Right. If you don't have a photo, that's absolutely true. If you don't have a photo next to your name on IMDb, you don't really have a career.
After that, you have Danzo Gordon.
Yeah.
And Dick Butkus. Okay. Those are the only four with photos from
the
show.
Okay, there you go. Hang Time, everybody. It says NBC Productions. That was on NBC? Wow.
Wow.
Hang Time.
How long was it on?
From 95 to 2000.
Ah,
104 episodes.
Wow. Oh, so it was on for a while.
Six seasons.
Six seasons. That's crazy. All right, we got to take a break here in a couple of minutes. We want to hear from you guys though. We were reminiscing. What TV shows did you watch in the 90s? We're talking about some forgotten teen TV shows from the 90s. Although Sweet Valley High is not a forgotten show. I don't know. I don't know. So give us a call or a text right now at 312-981-7200. We'll take your calls and read your texts about this. And we're doing some more 90s stuff, things that only 90s kids would appreciate, and some cool things that you owned in the 90s. That's coming up, celebrating the 90s this morning because of Captain Marvel, which takes place in 1995. Again, talk or text at 312-981-7200. Also, Triple Play Thursday if you want to get your requests in there. It's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. Okay. Why don't we take a break and we'll come back and it's time for news. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And then again is Whitesnake for Triple Play Thursday. you want to get in, 312-981-7200. All right, we're talking some 90s stuff this morning. Right now, we're talking about forgotten teen TV shows from the 90s and asking you what you watched back in that decade. 312-981-7200, if you would like to join us via talk or text. All right, let's see. Here is Steven, who's in Michigan on WGN. Hey, Steven.
Hey.
Hey.
Yeah, I briefly remembered that Hang Time show.
Uh-huh.
And I believe, Dick Butkus was like a basketball coach or something for
okay.
the group.
Yeah, I mean, it looks and like, then, the picture looks like he is their coach, because the plot of the show is teenagers at a high school dealing with playing basketball and stuff. So
it was kind of the, it was the Saturday morning, with Saved by the Bell and all those shows.
Yeah.
And then there was another one too that was California something that was where they were a band or something, a high school band, and they were all the same thing. It was all when Saved by the Bell was really big, NBC kept doing all those teen high school whatever type shows and stuff.
Right.
And then the ones I remember were all the TGIF stuff Boy Meets World and Full House and Urkel and all those were ones I watched too.
Right.
They were kind of the teen kind of whatever shows, but later at night and stuff. But
Hang Time. All right, thank you, Steven.
Yep.
Take care. Yeah, the TGIF was huge in the 90s.
Wasn't that Perfect Strangers part of that?
Perfect Strangers at one point was a part of it. Yeah. But the thing about the I never watched Family Matters, and every time I talk about Family Matters, I always have to say this. When I found out that Urkel didn't live in the house, I was like, wait a minute, he's not part of the family? He's like the neighbor?
Yeah.
Why do you keep letting this idiot in the house? Why? Because he just comes in and breaks stuff and goes, did I do that? He's really... I thought he lived with the family. I thought he was part of the family. And when someone told me, no, he's like the wacky neighbor. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Why would you let this guy in the house? Urkel's outside knocking on the door. You don't open the door. You say, go home, moron.
Well, he's got the hots for the daughter.
That's another reason why you shouldn't let him in the house. My God. All right, how about this one? Listen to the two stars of this one. This is a show called Get Real, which I have a vague remembrance of. But this is Anne Hathaway and Jesse Eisenberg.
Wow.
And they both look really young in the picture. The Green family is a little, as they say, dysfunctional. However, it's hard not to be with a midlife crisis and kids that are entering the height of their teen years. Unfortunately, the show only lasted 22 episodes to its name, but we did get to see some pretty awesome Hollywood stars in their young years. Jesse Eisenberg particularly looks like he looks like he's five in this picture. He's a young looking dude anyway, even at his age right now, but he looks really young. All right, we got some texts here. Chris in Elk Grove Village say, hey, what's up, Nick? Just wanted to chime in on some 90s shows I watched as a teen, and some of my favorites were Boy Meets World, Are You Afraid of the Dark, a Nickelodeon, and then we got HBO just to watch Tales from the Crypt. That's not a kid's show. You got cool parents if you're a teenager and they're letting you watch Tales from the Crypt on HBO. Also loved the cartoon show Tales from the Crypt on Saturdays. 301 area code says, Nick, my kids watched a lot of Nick, including the game shows, and of course the ABC TGIF lineup. Those were a staple in our home. Let's see. 262 area code. Ally McBeal and The Beat, filmed in Chicago in the early 90s with Mark Ruffalo. I don't remember that. 301 says, oh yeah, we used to watch Brotherly Love. Fan of the Lawrence family. 301 says, I think Brie Larson's first appearance was in a Disney Channel movie. Oh no, she was a child. She was a child actor. She did a bunch of stuff on Disney. That's how Brie Larson started. That's why when she started doing serious stuff, after Short Term 12, people were like, oh, she's not just quite she's not always going to be this Disney star. 847 area code, Shia LaBeouf in Even Steven. Oh, yeah, I remember that. I totally remember that. Little LaBeouf. 815 area code, in the 90s, I was mostly watching My So-Called Life. Yeah, me and you both. Don't even play around. You know, My So-Called Life. Oh.
That was a short-lived series, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was a couple of years.
Not even a couple of years. It was one season, and they left it open-end. You don't know if Angela got together with Jordan Catalano. I'm still pissed about that.
Wow. Well, everything's being brought back nowadays.
Oh, God.
They'll be a little older.
You think Claire Danes and Jared Leto are going to come back and do a TV series? I really don't. Well, Claire Danes, you know, Homeland's a TV series, but that's on Showtime, so it's different.
Yeah.
I mean, Melissa Joan Hart and Joey Lawrence did it.
Yeah, but they're not. Jared Leto has an Academy Award.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Claire Danes has, you know, got 26 Emmys. this 815 used to also watch Friends and Dawson's Creek, although also I liked a lot of the one-season shows like Mismatch with Alyssa Silverstone and Partners with John Cryer and Tate Donovan. Oh, my God. Yay. 815 area code says, do you remember the short-lived TV versions of Ferris Bueller? I do. With Jennifer Aniston in Jennifer Grey's role. People, regular listeners, know how I feel about Ferris Bueller. It's the second worst movie ever made. He's one of the most despicable characters in the history of film, and I hate everything about that movie, especially the main character. But if you're going to cast a weasel to play Ferris Bueller, they cast the right guy. Charlie Schlatter. If I remember correctly, can you look this up? Charlie Schlatter played Ferris Bueller in the TV series. And Charlie Schlatter was one of the most annoying, smug... He was in 18 again, where he and George Burns switch bodies.
Oh, good Lord.
Oh, my God, this guy. Charlie Schlatter. Unbelievably, obnoxiously annoying.
Oh, yeah. You remember
this guy?
Yeah.
You look at him, you just want to smack him right in the head.
Was he related to the producer of the Real People show?
I don't, you know, maybe
Schlatter?
Maybe he was, because I don't understand how he could get work otherwise. and then there was a TV version of Bill and Ted. There was a TV version of Bill and Ted?
No way.
Oh, I know there was an anime. Okay, animated. Okay, I thought they did like a live. I was like, you can't. You know, by the way, the sequel is they're going to start filming.
Yeah, it's
the latest.
Right,
I cannot
now.
Wait.
I'm so excited.
I cannot wait.
I will go to that premiere with you.
Oh, pff, yeah. Yeah, man. Please. 815 area code says, I think he did some sort of, he ran some sort of shop, a sports shop, at Dick Butkus did. In the hang time. 815 area code says, I used to watch Dinosaurs. I still think it's one of the weirdest shows of all time. 262 area code says, Ally McBeal with Calista Flockhart. 301 area code says, hey, this is really fun. I'd forgotten just how much crappy TV was on in the 90s. Glad I could remind you. And then Glenn in Evanston says, Anthony Anderson got his start on Hang Time. No, he did? Anthony Anderson was on Hang Time? Wow. You know what movie Anthony Anderson is hilarious in? Yeah. I love Anthony Anderson. Do you guys watch Black-ish?
I've seen a couple of episodes.
It's
not
a terrific show.
Same.
It's a terrific show, and he's great on it. And I've always liked Anthony Anderson. Always. I've always liked him. But he's hilarious in Harold and Kumar. Hilarious. And he's only got like two scenes in the movie, but he's absolutely hilarious in it. As are most people in that movie.
Yep, he was in Hang Time.
There we go, Anthony Anderson. Hang Time. You know what? He should keep that on his resume. He got to work with Dick Butkus.
Yeah.
Highlight of his career.
Didn't show up on the first list. I had to extend that.
Yeah,
cast
just
list,
a little.
Because he was only in 39 of the 104 episodes.
Oh, I see. So, I see. All right, how about this one? The next one on the Forgotten 90s TV list here is Ready or Not. It was a Disney Channel production. So now this one actually got to air for 5 seasons. Wow, I've never even heard of this thing. Can you look this one up too?
Yeah, I haven't heard of this one either.
See
I don't
who
even
cast
recognize
is?
The
I don't recognize
the pictures.
Yeah, I don't either. And maybe because it was oh so relatable. Ready or Not was about two teenage friends just going through life together. We've all been there, right? Ready or Not.
Let's see.
It aired for 5 seasons. Well, I didn't watch the Disney Channel, so I, you know what I mean. It wasn't one of my go-to channels in the 90s, so that's why I don't remember this at all.
Hmm.
Who were the two leads? Do we know?
It looks like Laura Bertram.
Uh huh.
And Lonnie Billard.
Oh, sure. Those two. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. All right. Next here. Yeah. Why did they do a TV version of Clueless? What was that all about? I remember that.
I don't know. I just remember seeing one episode and I was done.
And the leads in the TV version were like almost 30.
I don't even remember.
The
girls. Can you look that up? Because the picture here that they show, first of all, Cher looks exactly like Alyssa Silverstone, and it looks like Stacey Dash. They didn't do the. There's no way they did the TV show.
Alicia did not.
Who played Cher?
Rachel Blanchard.
Okay.
But Stacey Dash was one of the ones that stayed on.
Okay. You know,
that made that transfer. And who's the other one? Alyssa Donovan. Because she was Amber in the movie. And she
stayed on. So they got a girl who looked just like Alicia Silverstone then. Because they got a picture here from CBS, and she looks exactly like Alicia Silverstone.
Yeah, it's really close.
It's real close, man. Yes, they did make a TV spinoff of that classic rom-com. It surprisingly lasted for three. It lasted for three seasons?
Yeah.
Jeez. All right. How about this one? Oh, look at this. Flash Forward. Another Disney.
Oh, wow.
Another Disney show. Let's see. But that kid, you know what the kid on the end looks like, and he's not, but he looks like, oh man, why am I blanking on his name? The dude from Breaking Bad, who was on Price is Right, the guy who made the appearance. What the hell was his name? Aaron Paul. Looks like Aaron Paul, but it's not, I don't think. Oh, middle school. Absolutely no one wants to go back, but it could be fun to relive it through these four middle school pals. Flash Forward. Anybody in that? Ben? Anybody of note? Because I can't really recognize anybody from the still they have here, the Walt Disney production.
Yeah, somebody did another Flash Forward series, so I had to find the correct one.
Okay.
But,
who was in it?
Nobody I recognize. Ben Foster?
Oh, yeah, that's who it is.
He's Ben Foster.
Yeah, Ben Foster.
He's the only one.
Ben Foster, who is a terrific actor, a great actor, who was in, 40 Days a Night. He was in. He always plays like sort of psycho villains. I thought he looked like. I thought it was Aaron Paul, but I recognized the face. That's a young Ben Foster. There's no question about it. Yeah. And anybody else or no?
None that I'm recognizing right now. Jewel State.
No, I don't know that.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, she didn't. Oh, you know what? She was in. She was in Firefly.
Oh, okay.
And Serenity. She played Kaylee.
Oh, all right. Well, there you go. So that's a nice credit.
Yeah, that was one of those I had to click on because I recognized the face but couldn't place where
couldn't
I'd
place
seen
it. Yeah. Right. It's nice to know Ben Foster was working when he was a kid. All right, let's take a break here. And when we come back, more 90s TV shows that you might have forgotten. And what did you watch in the 90s as we celebrate that decade thanks to Brie Larson? 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text.
I love the blues. They tell my story.
Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. Jamming to some Whitesnake this morning. You want to request some songs here? It's Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs. Get them in now. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. We're celebrating the 90s this morning. We're going to talk about things that only 90s kids would appreciate and some of the coolest things that you owned in the 90s. We're reminiscing a little bit. But right now we're talking about TV shows in the 90s and talking about forgotten 90s teen TV shows. 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in. What were some of your favorites? What did you watch or what did your kids watch? 312-981-7200. Here's Mark on WGN. Hey, Mark.
Hi, Nick.
Hi.
There was a show, I think it was kind of a spinoff, like the Ferris Bueller
Platt. I think it was called Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
That's exactly right. Yes. Yes. I can't remember. Can you look that up, Ben? I want to know who played Parker Lewis. I can't remember the kid's name. I want to say it was like Corey. I think it was something like that. I actually liked Parker Lewis Can't Lose. I remember enjoying that show. I thought it was actually sort of original and a lot different than some of the sitcoms that were on at that time.
Corin Nemec?
Yeah, see, Corin Nemec. Who else is in it?
Billy Jane, Melanie Chartoff.
Melanie Chartoff from Fridays. Oh, yeah. From Fridays. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Timothy Stack.
Yeah.
Who else?
It was on for, Mark, that was on for a couple seasons, I think, right?
It was. Yeah, two or three at least.
Yeah,
I think.
Three seasons.
Yeah, Corin Nemec. I used to watch that show. That was a Fox show. That was one of those. That, you know, like when Fox was still sort of in its infancy.
Yeah,
that's when it came on. I remember that. Okay, Mark. Thanks, buddy.
You're welcome.
Okay, take care. Parker Lewis Can't Lose. Corin Nemec. I wonder what happened to that kid. Not a kid anymore. So, oh boy. All right, here's the next one on the forgotten list. Now, here's the thing. Ben, you're going to have to look up the song for me from it.
Okay.
The show is called The Heights.
Oh, I remember that one.
Now, look it up. Song from The Heights. There was only 12 episodes, and the teenagers lived in The Heights, and they formed a band called, yep, The Heights. And the song, now, the show only lasted 12 episodes. Nobody watched the show, but everybody bought the song.
Yeah, and you know, I told you I have all these albums of TV theme songs. I've got it on one of them.
Well, can you play a little bit of it? Can you?
Yeah, give me one second.
Okay, I'll give you a second. But anyway, the only thing I remember about The Heights is that nobody watched it. Like, the ratings were in the toilet. Absolutely nobody watched it. It only lasted one season, 12 episodes. Yeah, but the song was a smash. Someone so fine. How do you hold it close to where you are? How do you talk to an angel? It's like trying to catch a falling star. That's right. It's like trying to catch a falling star.
This part is, I get to see the music video.
Oh, the video.
What's going on, and it's just classic 90s, in and out of black and white.
It's ridiculous. Ridiculous. But that song was massive, but nobody, absolutely nobody watched that show. The Heights. See, that was at the time, you know, because everybody was trying to do, you know, trying to sort of capture the 90210 thing. You know, and make these sort of ensemble, pretty young people shows. And Fox was doing them, and NBC was trying to do them, and so, you know, they were just trying to recreate all those popular shows, and of course, none of them really worked as well as 90210. And The Heights only lasted, you know, for 12 episodes. But that song, man, that song charted huge. I think it actually probably, I think it went to number one because it was everywhere. It was everywhere. So, 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. Send us a text. We'll read it on the air, or give us a call and we'll talk about it. We're talking a little more TV here from the 90s that maybe you've forgotten. How about Popular? I remember this show. Popular. In a Drake and Josh scenario, these two high schoolers, one popular, one not so, are forced together because their parents are getting married. And I remember the show. It's that these two girls have to be together because of the parent. Obviously, like I just explained, the parents getting married. And I remember it. And this is another one. I vaguely remember. I don't recognize the actresses here. Maybe. Well,
what did you say the show was again?
Called Popular.
Popular.
Right.
I don't know why?
And it was a. I just remember, I remember I watched a couple of episodes of it, but it was at that time, you know, it was in the, like, sort of the mid-90s era. But, I mean, these girls are very attractive. They're very pretty. I don't know.
Brooke and Sam?
Oh,
the girls, not the actress's name. Leslie Bibb?
Oh, Leslie Bibb. Of course, I know her.
Carly Pope?
Don't know Carly Pope.
Leslie Grossman, Sarah Rue?
Sarah Rue. Well, Sarah Rue went on to a lot of fame. She had like two sitcoms, Sarah Rue. I can't remember the name of her first one, but yeah.
So, I don't recognize any of these other names here.
All right, there
Diane
you
go. Delano?
Don't know. Leslie Bibb and Sarah Rue. I know those two.
So. Okay.
All right, we got a break. We got the news coming up right after this on 720 WGN. If you want to jump in here for some 90s TV talk, we're going to wrap up the old these are forgotten 90s TV shows. 312-981-7200. Is this Fly Jam Friday? What's going on here?
You would think that.
This is as fly as it gets, my friend.
Oh, yeah.
Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. Tell everybody who requested this and tell everybody what it is.
That came from the 301 area code, and that was Could It Be I'm Falling in Love by the Spinners.
Spinners. Doesn't get much flyer than the Spinners.
Yeah, I like the Spinners.
Yep. Well, we're going to hear two more songs from the Spinners here on Triple Play Thursday. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. It's Nick DiGilio here, and we're here till 5 o'clock. I am your overnight dude every weekday morning till 5, and so there you go. All right, we got some people on the line here. We were talking about sort of forgotten TV teen shows from the 90s. We're doing some 90s retrospective stuff here, remembering and reminiscing about the 90s. Captain Marvel comes out this weekend, and it takes place in 1995. And so I thought, hey, let's talk a little bit about the 90s. And we got some fun stuff coming up. We got things that only 90s kids would remember, would appreciate, and some of the coolest things that you owned in the 90s. And we will get to all that stuff coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. We would love to hear from you. Let's see. Here's Glenn on WGN. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, good morning, Nick. How you doing?
All right. What's up?
Not too much. You're going to have to help me on this one. I tried remembering the name. The premise of this show, I think it was an early, Nick, was an early 50s TV family was canceled, and they moved next door to this family, and the boy that lived in the house is the only one that recognized them. Does that ring a bell?
Not at all.
you would think it was an all right show, but it was kind of, well, stupid.
You said it was on Nickelodeon?
It might have been an early Nick show.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, so so a family moves next door. They were a former 50s sitcom family?
Yeah.
And they moved next door to a family, and only one kid recognized them.
Right, yeah. Of course, they had the pretty daughter that he liked, and then the younger, the son, and then the mom and dad. And,
Yeah, that doesn't ring a bell at all. Maybe a listener will know. Glenn, keep your radio on.
All right, will do.
Okay, buddy, thanks.
All right, have a nice weekend.
Take care, buddy. Bye-bye. 312-981-7200. If you can help Glenn out, 312-981-7200. Here's Jill on WGN. Hi, Jill.
Okay, so I guess I'm the only one who watched The Heights.
Oh, you did?
I love that show.
Nobody was watching it, you know, unfortunately. But that song was everywhere, right? I mean,
it was. It was everywhere. On the. Do you remember they used to have, like, the Power Ballad albums? That was on there. the one that I was thinking of was Erie, Indiana.
I love that show.
It was an NBC show, and it was on, like, either Saturday night or Sunday night. I think it was Sunday night. And it was just, it was so clever, and I just don't think it caught on because it was too clever.
It was also a strange show.
It was fun.
I thought it was terrific. I loved Erie, Indiana. I especially loved the episode where director Joe Dante makes an appearance as Joe Dante.
That's right.
Yeah, that was a good show. That's another one, Jill, that nobody really watched. I think it was because you're right. It was real, real smart and real, real self-referential before that became a thing.
And it had its twin sister city, Normal, Illinois.
Right, right, exactly.
So it was kind of cheesy, but you know, it was just a smart little show.
Yep.
And it just didn't catch on for an audience.
It's true. Well, Jill, I'm glad someone called in who actually watched The Heights.
I'm that one.
Okay. Have a good morning, okay?
You too. Bye.
All right, take care. There's someone watching the Heights. President of the Heights fan club. Okay, now I'm looking at this next one on the article with the list of the forgotten TV teen shows. This one looks ridiculous. Do yourself a favor and look up The Famous Jet Jackson. That's with two T's. The Famous Jet Jackson. In The Famous Jet Jackson, the kid actor decides to move back home and live a normal life, and, well, that doesn't go, that doesn't really work out so great. This show had a rockin' 65 episodes, so kudos to Jet Jackson. And it's Buena Vista Television, which is also
Disney.
Disney. Yeah. So I don't remember this at all. But it looks ridiculous. Just from the, I don't know what's going on. I can't make out what's happening here with the white picket fence and the people in overalls, and then like there's Jet Jackson all spiffed up in his early 90s hip hop gear. Any information on this one, Ben? The Famous Jet Jackson?
I definitely don't remember this one. And I'm trying to find anything I can on IMDb about it, and there's not much to go off of.
Mm. All right. The Famous Jet Jackson.
Yeah, it got 3 seasons.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
All right, this next one was a UPN show. You want to look up Breaker High? Look that one up, Ben. Breaker High. Some attractive ladies in it, I can tell you that right now, just by looking at the by looking at the still here. It was on UPN. So before there was the Suite Life on Deck, there was Breaker High. These teenagers attended a high school on a cruise ship. What?
Yeah, I vaguely remember that one.
But the show only lasted for 44 episodes. The high school on a cruise ship. Well, that's an original premise. Who are some of the people that are in it?
I hope you're ready for this one.
All right.
How did it only last that long when you have Ryan Gosling in it?
Oh, God. Is it Canadian? It's probably Canadian,
right?
It's
probably Canadian.
Yeah. I mean, the UPN had it on. Who else is on it?
Names I'm seeing are Rachel Wilson.
I know her.
Terry Kahn.
Uh-huh.
Wendy Kenya. Persia White. Tyler Labine. Or Labine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Because it sounds to me like it's a Canadian production that was picked up by UPN.
That's what I'm...
Ryan Gosling. I'm sure he's thrilled with that with that credit.
Oh, yep. Filming locations. Burnaby, British Columbia.
Ah, there you go.
Yep. Right there.
Okay. All right. Well, that's Breaker High. A high school on a cruise ship. All right. I'll buy that for a dollar. Hey, speaking of buy that for a dollar, have you seen this new Burger King commercial with RoboCop as the colonel?
No.
And I think it's Peter. I think it's Peter Weller's voice. I'm almost positive it's Peter Weller's voice. Can you look it up? Google that. See if it's RoboCop KFC commercial, and see if it, because it sounds, if it's not Peter Weller, it sounds exactly like Peter Weller. And it's RoboCop, and they put the mustache and the white mustache and the goatee. And it's Peter Weller.
It is Peter Weller.
That's unbelievable. That's unbelievable. Because I was like, man, if that's not Peter Weller, that's a guy who can do an unbelievably accurate Peter Weller. But yeah, it's RoboCop as the colonel. But I'm sure you can find it online. Is the commercial online?
I got a copy here.
We can play the audio, man.
Right.
Because it's really funny, because RoboCop walks into this room with a family watching TV, and he's got a tray full of chicken and, like, I think the $20 deal or something like that. And it's RoboCop, but he's got they put the gray hair on top of RoboCop's head.
Yeah.
And the gray mustache and the goatee.
It looks like there's a couple of them.
Okay. Well, the one I saw, he comes
here's,
in.
Here's this one.
Right, here's, listen.
Colonel Sanders. Your Kentucky Fried Chicken is delicious. What's the secret recipe?
If I told you, I'd have to kill you. Ha 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 ha. Ha ha ha.
Colonel's secret recipe. You can eat it, but you can't know it.
And they've got the score. That's Basil. Yeah. That's Basil Poledouris' score from RoboCop.
That's the best part.
Hold on a second. Is there? You said there was another one.
I'm looking, and it looks like it's just like a 15 second clip and another.
That might be. Try the 15 second one.
All right, hold on a second.
Because that might be the one where he counts down. You know how you have 10 seconds to comply.
Yeah.
He does that thing.
There's a family sitting in the.
Yeah, that's it.
That's the one.
Yeah.
All right.
Howdy, folks. Try my $20 fill up. You have 10 seconds to comply.
Shh.
You now have 5 seconds to comply. 4, 3, 2. Try any $20 fill up at KFC.
And you know what movie they're watching?
I do remember.
They're watching RoboCop.
They're watching RoboCop.
On the TV, and he walks in.
So.
There's one more. He's using that laser vision.
Uh-huh.
And he identifies the words are hungry boy, and there's this guy in and out here. Is it in an alley?
All white meat. Hungry boy. Enjoy! Try an all white meat $5 fill up at KFC.
I gotta say.
He threw the chicken into it.
Oh,
the guy's like halfway down the alley, and he throws it right in his mouth.
Oh, there you go. All right. I got to say that these Colonel commercials are pretty funny, and you know the fact that they keep mixing up the Colonels, and you know they have different celebrities coming in and playing it. I love this idea. The RoboCop as the Colonel.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great idea.
And he's wearing glasses.
Yeah. That's right. He's got the Colonel's glasses
right.
on too.
Hilarious.
It's really funny. I just didn't know whether it was Peter Weller, but it is.
That's funny.
Oh, man. All right. Let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll wrap up the 90s TV stuff and then jump into some stuff that only 90s kids would appreciate and cool things that you owned in the 90s.
Like the sun that shines on a rainy day, it's a cloud of love. One of a kind. Love affair is. When you're down is up, when you're up is down, but love stays around. And when you know you're right, you got to make a little sacrifice. You make it for love. Whoa.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Here till 5 a.m. We're in the Allstate Skyline studio, about 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's a Thursday morning. Means Triple Play Thursday. And that's the Spinners request right there. On Triple Play Thursday. And if you want to make a request, one artist, three songs, get them in now, 312-981-7200. And that's the phone number and the text number to contact us as we talk about all things 90s this morning. And we're covering some 90s TV. And if you want to tell us about some of the TV shows that you watched in the 90s, or if you recognize some of these sort of forgotten TV shows that we've been talking about, we'd love to hear from you via text or talk, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. So let's move on to some of these other ones that are sort of forgotten. And let's see. What about California Dreams? It's an NBC production. I don't necessarily remember it. The name sounds familiar, but of course, you know, the first thing I think of is Mamas and the Papas, but that's California Dreamin'.
Yeah. Was this the one that took place like on a oceanside snack bar or something like that?
The only thing that I see here is a bunch of sort of teenagers all holding on to one surfboard and smiling by the beach. And it says, what teenager wouldn't love to live in California and be a part of a band? This show was filled with lots of music and lots of drama. California Dreams.
Nah.
I don't really recognize any of the faces here of the young people who may have gone on to become stars. Yeah. All right, how about this one? 15, formerly Hillside.
Is that like two titles?
It just says 15, and then parenthetically it says formerly Hillside. It says, the students of Hillside High dealt with a lot of drama on this show. Everything from divorce, dating, alcohol abuse was covered in the show, in the show's 4 seasons. And then plus you get to see a young Ryan Reynolds. Oh. We got Ryan Gosling in one of them, and then the other Ryan.
This is a Nickelodeon. Looks like it's another Canadian show.
Oh, well, yeah, that makes sense. Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
All right, let's see what else we got here.
Oh, and it's available on Amazon Prime.
Oh, fantastic.
The first season.
I know what I'm doing when I get home. how about this one? Hey, okay, now we're talking. Malibu Shores.
There you go.
Before we saw her on Felicity, Carrie Russell.
You're in heaven now.
Hi, I'm Carrie Russell, and I love Nick's radio show.
I know you do, baby. Carrie Russell starred as Chloe Walker in Malibu Shores, a short-lived television series. It was a Nickelodeon show about wealthy teens from Malibu who cross paths with teens from working-class families who live in the San Fernando Valley. I'm trying to see if I can recognize anybody else. I mean, Carrie Russell looks exactly the same. Now her hair is straightened now. But she had that, you know, obviously that beautiful curly hair on Felicity. I recognized her right away. I don't know if there's anybody else in this show that went on to do anything else.
Well, does it matter?
It doesn't matter to me.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
This is all that matters.
Hi, I'm Carrie Russell, and I love Nick's radio show.
Yeah, I know you do, baby. Oh, man. I love Carrie Russell. I love Felicity. All right. What do we got here? Here's James on WGN. Hey, James.
Hey, good morning, Nick. How you doing this morning?
All right.
I love your show, bro.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
Hey, I got a little inside scoop on the famous Jet Jackson.
Oh, you do? all right.
The thing is, I think my kids used to watch it back in the 90s. I caught glimpses of it. From what I got of it, it was a kid. He used to be a spy. He used to be like this big spy as a teenage spy.
Uh-huh.
And he went to try to live a normal life. But the spy life, it kept bringing him back to the spy life.
Oh, all right.
And a little backstory to that, the kid that played the famous Jet Jackson, he's dead.
Oh, no.
He died or committed suicide.
Oh, no.
I forgot his name. Yeah, but, yeah, that's the backstory to it.
Oh.
The guy who played Jet Jackson, I think he committed suicide, if I'm not mistaken. Look it up for me.
Yeah,
please.
We'll have to look that one up. We'll find out. Let's find out. First of all, we got to get the name of the actor. Can you look
Lee that? Thomas Young.
Lee Thomas Young. Okay. Then we got to Google him to see what happened.
And he passed away in 2013.
Okay. So
I have to click on it to get more detail.
All right.
A suicide, it's saying.
That's terrible. Yeah. Now I feel bad that I made fun of the show, James.
He was also...
my kids used to watch it. I used to catch glimpses of it because I was never really... I grew up growing up as a kid. I'm a 60s kid.
Yeah.
I never was a fan of Disney.
Yeah.
I never was a fan. Never was a fan.
Okay.
Hanna-Barbera, Sid and Marty Krofft.
Yeah.
Those were my guys.
I got you. I got you, man. I understand completely. I identify with that. All right, James, thanks for the call, man.
Yeah, enjoy. Have a good day.
Take care, buddy. Here's Jill on WGN. Hi, Jill.
Yeah, it's me, the one who watched The Heist.
What's going on?
I'm the only one who watched California Dreams as
you did,
well.
You watched California Dreams, too. Was anybody on it that went on to anything, you know, of note?
Honestly, they were so young, I don't really remember.
Okay.
Like now looking at the, you know, the cast list and everything. But it was a fun show, and that one with Carrie Russell, too, it was the 90s.
Yeah.
You know.
I gotcha.
I was in college in the 90s, so,
yeah.
So to me, it was just like, it was just on, and, you know, it was just...
I understand.
You know, with the noise in the background. Right. But it's so funny, because they would have, like, Saved by the Bell, and then they would have, they would also show this, like, on Saturday morning. That's when they started to get out of, like, the cartoons and... put more of this stuff. They
right.
would run that, rerun this stuff from Nickelodeon onto
right.
the
right, right.
Saturday morning. So that's how I got that.
My friends were in college in the, I went to college, but I dropped out. But my friends were in college in the mid to late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would go down, but three of my good friends went to school in Champaign. So mm-hmm. we would go down for the weekend just to drink. You know, we'd go on Green Street and just drink and hang out, and then we'd get drunk, and we'd come back, and we'd watch like an hour and a half of Double Dare. That was our...
That's the thing. Like, you just watch this stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, it was just nostalgic. You
exactly.
Know?
You're absolutely, absolutely right, Jill. All right, thanks. If there are any other TV shows you want to admit to watching, you can.
Okay, bye.
All right, take care. That's funny. Got a bunch of texts here. 708 says TV characters, Miami Vice, Crockett, and Tubbs. That's the 80s, man. That's the 80s. That's not the 90s. That's absolutely, and that's like the pinnacle of the 80s. 708, Erico, Clueless was a TV show in 1997. Only returning cast member of the, from the movie was Stacey Dash, but Brittany Murphy did make a cameo as a different character. Why would she play a different character? She was so good in Clueless. Two shows relating to places that I lived at the time. Hudson Street, set in Hoboken, New Jersey. It starred the infamous Tony Danza. And then Down the Shore, set in Belmar, New Jersey. 773 just says, don't forget Degrassi. We didn't. We mentioned it. 847 area code said, The Legend of the Hidden Temple. Legends of the Hidden Temple. That was a Nickelodeon game show.
Awesome.
That was the greatest game show they had.
And I can't tell you enough.
Yeah.
Mr. Chagrou and Miss Leon also sing the praises of it. We did a whole segment on the show talking about behind the scenes and all this other stuff. We had a person who actually attended a taping of it. They called in. Yeah. And it was one of those shows that, like, I guess, you know, because I didn't watch it. I was older at the time. But it was one of those shows where kids would watch it and go, I so want to be on this show. I would so love to do the, because you got like an obstacle course or something at the end. And it was like, it looks like Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom kind of a thing. Let's see. Yes, there was a short-lived live-action TV version of Bill and Ted in addition to the cartoon. There was?
I'm looking this up.
Why? Why would you? How? Butkus also worked on My Two Dads. Oh, he did?
Yeah.
773 area code says, Nickelodeon's Roundhouse. It was like a variety show with some adult themes. Boy, Nickelodeon had a lot of shows. They really did a lot of programming, man. A lot of varying programming. They had, you know, these original sitcoms and, you know, and game shows and talk shows and variety shows. Wow. 773 area code says, the Friday the 13th TV series was good. I'll do one more before we break here. 630 area code, Xena the Warrior Princess with Lucy Lawless and the Hercules series. Good stuff.
Hey, Nick, I found it.
All right, Bill and Ted.
Lasted 8 episodes.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. Right. But Don Lake was in it.
All right.
So I'll give it that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
8 episodes of the live-action Bill and Ted. I think that's about eight episodes too much. That would be my guess. I mean, don't be messing with Bill and Ted. It's Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves. That's it. Nobody else. It's Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves. Let's get that straight, shall we? Don't make me angry. By the way, Ben, I'm of the opinion that the second Bill and Ted movie is better than the first.
I'm with you.
Because of Death. Because Thank of you. William Sadler as Death.
Yep. Best 3 out of 5.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Hilarious. All right, let's take a break here. The news is coming up in about 30 seconds.
Seems like you'll never find someone willing to love you. Keep on looking, you'll soon discover a mighty love will sometimes make you weep and moan. A mighty love, you see it
all right.
By the telephone.
Welcome, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio downtown Chicago here until 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Triple play Thursday. It's one artist, three songs, some spinners right there. Hey, by the way, tomorrow our regular features are as we do on Friday. If you guys want to participate, one of them is Fly Jams Friday. That's where we dedicate some time on the air to play some R&B and some funky stuff and some Fly Jams. DJ Obi-Wan. Is our DJ, and so he'll be spinning some requests for you. Also, we have Straight Out of Context. Straight Out of Context is when you listen to this show or to this radio station, the entire radio station, 24/7, as you should anyway. And whenever anybody says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds vaguely dirty and it makes you giggle like a 9-year-old, you jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. nickdshow@gmail.com. And there's also Nick D Show Spies. That's, again, you listen to this station 24/7. Whenever anybody mentions me or the show in any capacity, we want to know about it. You become a spy. Jot down the day, the time, who said it, who was talking about us, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. We also have You Big Dummy, where we talk about 5 of the dumbest stories with dumb people doing dumb stuff And we go through those, and then we vote on who's the biggest dummy of the week. That's all on our Friday show. Tomorrow, by the way, also, Herb Weisbaum is going to join us for his monthly consumer visit. He's our consumer guy, tries to help you out against scams and any consumer and all consumer-related questions that you have. You can text them in or call them in tomorrow morning when Herb is with us. That's on the Friday show. All right, we're going to talk more about the 90s here. We got some things that only kids would appreciate from the 90s and some things that you cool things that you owned in the 90s. But let's wrap up the with some text here. About TV. 262 area code, Get a Life with Chris Elliott. I loved that show. I love Chris Elliott. Yeah, and I also love his daughter, Abby Elliott, and I miss her on Saturday Night Live. She was great on SNL. 708 area code says, Nick, you have to mention Svengoolie and Sunday Matinee movies. Well, Svengoolie's still on, man. He's still on. By the way, in case people didn't know this, Rich is celebrating his 40th year doing Svengoolie.
Holy smokes.
40th year. Started in 1979. Started with, as Son of Svengoolie, and then switched over to just regular Svengoolie. Been playing the character for 40 years now. We're going to do a special celebration of that at the Flashback Horror Convention this year. Rich goes every year. He hosts the costume contest at the... Flashback weekend every convention every year, and it's always, for me, it's always the highlight. I get to introduce him and hang out, and then watch him just kill on stage, making fun of people and or having fun with people who have these weird costumes. But anyway, we're going to do a whole special thing. The whole weekend is going to be dedicated to Rich on his 40th year as Svengoolie.
That's cool.
Yeah, he's the best. 630 area code said the guy who called in the show he was talking about. Remember the guy who called in and said they moved in next door and they're the only one person. Blah blah blah. That's called Hi Honey, I'm Home. And the other person, a second person said, I think the show that the caller was referencing is Hi Honey, I'm Home. It was unique at the time because it ran on Nickelodeon and ABC.
So, not long, apparently.
That's the name of the show there. Hi Honey, I'm Home. I hope we help you out. I actually miss the Sunday evening Disney movie classics. Used to watch it every Sunday. Wonderful World of Disney. Watched it every Sunday when I was a kid. Every Sunday. Let's see. 779 area code. The Heights was a spinoff of 90210. Oh. Oh, okay. Well, then that makes sense. Jamie Walters, the lead, was Donna's abusive boyfriend. It was also the only canceled show with a number one song. Yeah, that's what we were talking about because... The show was the song was unbelievably huge. You couldn't get away from it, but the show did not do well. 301 area code confirming. Yes, sadly, the actor who played Jet Jackson later appeared on Rizzoli and Isles, but he then committed suicide. He was on Rizzoli and Isles. Wow. The character of Jet Jackson was a kid who starred in an action show. The program followed the character in regular life and on his show. That's sad. And then 301 area code says, "I loved Erie, Indiana." There was a Saturday morning sequel later on a subtitled called The Other Dimension with different actors. By the way, Joe Dante runs a terrific website called Trailers from Hell. I am very familiar with Trailers from Hell. It's one of my favorite go-to websites. It's great. So I'm also friends with Joe Dante on Facebook. Joe Dante, man. There's a director that needs to work more. This is a guy who hasn't made a movie in a long time, and that's a damn shame because he's one of the best, Joe Dante. So, all right. Okay. Now, the question here, Ben, is when I mention these things, you remember, you will appreciate these things that 90s kids will.
I was perusing that list earlier. And
yeah.
There were quite a few.
All right. Do you remember Dunkaroos?
I remember them. Never really was a fan, but
these cinnamon graham crackers packaged next to rainbow chip studded with Rangers were magical. Every kid... wanted to be your friend, or at least a few seconds it took to dunk the tiny cookie. So, all right. How about the Macarena? Let's not. The less we discuss the Macarena, I think the better we'll be.
I think you need to move on.
Yeah, I agree.
I got married in the first time I got married. It was in 1996. It was in the September of 1996, and it was basically at the height of the popularity of the Macarena. And I warned our DJ at our reception. I said, if you play the Macarena, I will kill you. I just want you to know that right now. So he did play the Chicken Dance, which is totally fine with me. Because at the show that I was mentioning earlier, many of the cast members of that show, White Trash Wedding and a Funeral, were there. And in fact, my wife, my ex-wife, was also one of the, she was also in White Trash Wedding and a Funeral. So we had to have the chicken dance, because the chicken dance was a major, major plot point of White Trash Wedding and a Funeral. So we didn't have the Macarena, but we did have the chicken dance. And I like the chicken dance anyway. All right, of course, the 90s wouldn't be the 90s without the Beanie Babies.
Oh, God, what a, what a letdown that was for so many people.
Well, I mean, there was a lot of people who were collecting them thinking that they were going to be worth a lot of money, and they just weren't.
Exactly. We had to make a trip to McDonald's or whoever.
No, it was McDonald's. Yeah, McDonald's had
them. All the time.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. We would just drive through just to... I wouldn't order anything. I'd say, can I just buy the Beanie Baby?
Right.
And they would have to get the manager's approval.
Yeah. Okay, how about the Nintendo 64?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Still got it.
Do you?
Yeah, I was a fan of GoldenEye. Yes.
I had a... Okay, here's the deal. There was a dude who used to hang out. This was when I worked at Simons and hung out at Simons in Andersonville. I lived in Andersonville for almost 14 years, and I was there. I was at Simons every night, and I worked there for a few years as well. There was a guy who was dating one of the bartenders at Simons, okay? And she was hot, like really, really hot. And he would, rather than go to her house to, you know, to get busy, he's like, I'm not coming over, because he was playing GoldenEye.
In the bar?
No.
Oh, on the 64?
No, I'm just saying, no, yeah, at home.
Oh.
But I'm saying I knew this guy. You mentioned GoldenEye. Ben mentioned GoldenEye.
Right, right.
So the GoldenEye story is that there's this guy who's dating this unbelievably hot woman who chose to play GoldenEye for 6 hours a night instead of sleep with her. So it must have been a good game. Trust me, if you saw this woman, you'd be like, well, that must be the best video game of all time. Fanny packs.
Why?
But you know,
they're making a comeback.
They are making a comeback.
No way.
Yes, yeah. They are. Yes, they are. Fanny packs are indeed making a comeback.
I promise you, Roger, you go out on Wacker or Michigan once it warms up, and you will see them all over.
He's not lying. They are making a comeback. I'm not really sure why, but they are making a comeback. Oh, I can do a real quick theater story attached to this one.
I was going to say, I expected there to be one in the last one.
So I co-wrote and directed this play called Black and Blue. Oddly, took place in a bar.
A great play.
Oh, thank you, Roger.
Seriously.
Thank you very much. Thank you for coming out to see it. I appreciate that. It was about two brothers. One's a hardcore Sox fan. One's a hardcore Cubs fan. The entire play takes place over a course of like 10 years. And it, every game, every show take, or every scene takes place during an interleague game that counts. So it was the very first scene in the show takes place, the first Cubs Sox game that actually counted when it was, you know, back in the late 90s when they started doing it. And it took place over the course of the year. The entire play took place in the characters, the brothers' father's bar. He owned it. It was called Sonny's Bar. And he was not a baseball fan. He was a hardcore Bears fan. So it was a fun show, and it was about these two brothers, and it explored the relationship between them and their father, and it was also a show about the rivalry between the Cubs and the Sox. So we had a lot of fun doing it. And both of us, though, Anthony Ternus, who wrote it with me, we're both really big Cubs fans, but we went out of our way to make it even Steven, you know what I mean? Because I don't like the Sox at all. And so, but we tried to add, and when Anthony first gave me the script, because he wrote the first draft, when he gave me the script, it was so pro-Cubs and so anti-Sox. I'm like, Tony, you can't do this, man. You can't do it. We have to make it seem like the people who wrote this play are divided right down the middle and want to be fair to both teams. So we had to do a bunch of rewrites, and we did a bunch of improvisation with the actors, and we changed the script until we came to the final draft, and then we put it up. So we put it up in 2011. Okay, so that was the first. Then we remounted it in 2013 because it was a huge success. So in 2011 we put it up. Now at that point in 2011. Nobody was wearing fanny packs. Okay, they had been out of fashion for, I don't know, at that point, maybe, what, 15 years, 16,
easily.
17, 18 years. So there's a scene in the play that takes place in the bar. Well, I just said everything takes place in the bar. But this group of people from New York are in, and they're screaming and they're being really obnoxious, and they're screaming about, they're pro-Cubs. They're talking about the Cubs. And so they're from New York, and so they start, they're really annoying everybody in the bar. So finally the brothers confront them. And it becomes this sort of New York versus Chicago thing, which we also wanted to explore, you know. And so we were doing that. And so at one point they're like, yeah, we're from New York. And so one of the brothers goes, let me see your ID. And so he asks each person to show their ID. And they're not from Manhattan. They're not from any of the boroughs. One guy's from upstate New York. One guy, you know, so they're not real, like, New Yorkers. They're not, like, Manhattan borough, you know, living New Yorkers. None of them. They all live further away. And so, but the third guy that they ask for an ID, he's sitting at a table, you know, like, at a table. And you can't see him from, like, sort of his mid-drift, you know, like, his chest down. Because he's up against the table. So when they asked for the ID, I had him, like, scoot back on his chair and then stand up to reveal he's wearing a fanny pack. And it got a laugh every single night because fanny packs are ridiculous. And so, like, and when he stood up and showed the fanny pack, not only would the audience laugh, but the entire bar would go, what are you doing, fanny pack? He's like, I keep all my good stuff in here. So there's a fanny pack story right there related to another.
When I was in New York, I saw at least 20, 30 people going through the hotel lobby.
They're back. They're back. Yeah. Roger, seriously, they're back. Yeah. So, I mean, if I were to put that play up right now, that moment would not get a laugh. But right. back in 2011, when we first put it up, it got a huge laugh. So there you go. All right. I don't know. I can't believe how many things we talked about this morning have been related to plays that I've done. I only did plays for about 15 years, so maybe that's why. I don't know. All right, we got a break here. I just say, this has been one of the best Triple Play Thursdays that we've had. The people who are requesting have really good taste in music this morning. Brian Ferry rules.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch today. I mean, I really had to narrow down because we had a lot of suggestions.
And we appreciate that. We appreciate you guys, participating in our things here. This is Triple Play Thursday. Who requested Brian Ferry? God bless him.
We can thank Ike from Country Club Hills.
Oh, good old Ike. Yeah. So we'll have two more Brian Ferry songs. He's great, Brian Ferry. All right, let's get back to it. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. We're talking about all things 90s. Things that 90s kids would remember, like the Tamagotchis. Did you ever have a Tamagotchi? Did you ever have one die?
No.
You didn't let one die?
My sister.
Oh, your sister would
have. She fell for that nonsense.
She did. Okay. Yeah. All right. How about AOL?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember the... Yeah.
Yep.
Actually, my dad still had it for many, many years after they moved out of the house into the senior housing. That's after he learned how to use a computer.
The dial-up sounds you could imitate your parents saying that they needed to get to the phone now, so get off the computer. That was one thing you had to worry about. There was internet dating. You've Got Mail were some of the more memorable things, and you couldn't escape AOL CDs being mailed to you and your family. They make great coasters. Let me just say this right now. I still have an AOL account.
What?
I have an AOL email account. That's my main email account is AOL.
Hey.
Wow.
Hey, Nick, did it sound like this?
That's it.
Yeah. Let's bring that noise back.
Yeah. That's the 90s, man. All right, how about the Discman? Oh, the Discman. Once upon a time, we used compact discs to store our music. We listened to Discman or Walkmans or CD players. If you were really cool, you had CD player. You remember how songs would skip if you walked a bit quicker?
Oh, yeah.
Carrying music has become a little bit easier these days. Yeah, no kidding. I had a Walkman. I had a Discman. Yes, sir.
Yeah, and I'd listen to the Discman when I was going to school. But if I was mowing the lawn, it had to be the Walkman, because otherwise that's skipping.
Oh, yeah, that's true. How about Lisa Frank paraphernalia? One word, rainbow. Rainbow cats, rainbow unicorns by rainbows, rainbow puppies painting rainbows on a rainbow background. Rainbows, rainbows, man.
We have a ton of those for our daughter.
I'm looking at I didn't know the artist's name, but yeah, that was everywhere. That was everywhere.
That was like 80% of Trapper Keepers.
Yeah, it's true. All right. Slap bracelets. Oh, this
yeah.
Is, you remember the slap bracelets?
Why don't they bring those back?
Yeah, they should. You know, if you're wearing a fanny pack, you may as well have a slap bracelet. How many fashioned accessories made that satisfying, distinctive snap when you put them on? A snap bracelet or five meant that you were trendy. All right. Pokemon cards and Pokemon everything. It's amazing how that's still a mm-hmm. thing, but it's only now it's virtual.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are falling down. People are falling down manholes because they're playing their Pokemon thing.
We still have a ton in the house.
You know, still one of my favorite stories. We had a on You Big Dummy 2 weeks ago. We had a You Big Dummy involving some idiot playing the get the Pokemon. Pokemon. He punched a cop because there was a whole bunch of people playing Pokemon Go in this hotel lobby. And they were blocking people from getting to the desk or getting in and out. So security came up and said, "You guys have to leave. You can't run around in this." There were like 15, 20 people playing the Pokemon game in this hotel lobby. And the security guy came up and said, "Hey, you got to leave." And then a cop came up and said, "Look, you have to disperse right now." And this guy who was desperately trying to find his last Pokemon punched the cop.
Jeez.
Let's see. In the 90s, how about all the cartoons? Saturday morning cartoons with sugary cereal and cozy pajamas were the best. Well, listen, they had that when I was growing up, too. Late 60s, 70s. Just a few cartoons we finally remember are Rugrats. Oh, you know, Rugrats were great.
Anything from that era was fantastic.
I totally agree with you. I totally agree with you. And I watched this. I'm an adult, and I watched that stuff. I loved Rugrats. Hey Arnold. Cat Dog. Ed, and Eddie. Dexter's Laboratory. I love Dexter's Laboratory.
That's a favorite. That and Johnny Bravo.
Yeah. Sailor Moon. And then Dragon Ball Z. And my favorite of all time, the Powerpuff Girls. I love the Powerpuff Girls.
I'm glad I got to pass that one along a little bit. My niece loves the Powerpuff Girls.
God, I love them. Yeah. I have the whole series at home, the big box set on DVD. Yeah, I love that. I love that. I love the message of it with the female empowerment of it. Mm-hmm. I think the animation is beautiful. The characters are great. Mojo Jojo.
Oh yeah,
one of the greatest villain characters of all time. Come on, and how about him? One of the creepiest characters ever. And who did you have a favorite Powerpuff Girl?
Bubbles.
Yeah, Bubbles. Yeah. Mine was Buttercup. Voiced, by the way, by E.G. Daily.
Oh,
who was in Pee-wee's Big Adventure?
Yeah.
So I don't know Warheads.
Oh, I know Warheads.
Candy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Explodes in your mouth.
Really?
Yeah. Well,
it was super sour. Like candy and
pucker up. Remember competitions that you'd have with other kids? Who could tolerate the most pieces of sour candy for the longest period of time?
Yep.
Black cherry Warheads were the best.
Yep. I agree with that. And at Christmas, my mom would get a huge bag and stick it in my stocking every year.
I don't have memory of that whatsoever. Wow. Yeah. All right, let's break. We got the news coming up, and we got more 90s stuff. If you want to jump in with any of your 90s memories, what do you remember as a kid? What were some of the items that you had? 312-981-7200. The news is up after this. Love this song too. I love Brian Ferry. Fantastic. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. It's Nick DiGilio here. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah! It's Brian Ferry right there. We'll hear one more before we end the show. And we will be back tomorrow on Friday morning, but we're here now and we're talking 90s stuff. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 if you have any 90s memories that you want to share with us. 312-981-7200. We're talking about stuff that 90s kids will definitely remember. And they have Silly Putty here. Silly Putty isn't exclusively 90s. I had Silly Putty when I was a kid.
Yeah. That was from the 50s.
Yeah, I mean, I had it, you know, 60s and 70s when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So did it have a resurgence in the 90s for some reason?
I bought it out of nostalgia for the grandkids.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was not big like it was when you or I were growing up.
No, no.
Yeah, when I was introduced to it, it was in the 80s. And then, yeah, but
I just think I just think Silly Putty's timeless, quite frankly. I think it's been around, you know, every decade Silly Putty's pretty popular. But I remember I played with Silly Putty all the time when I was a kid. So, all right, here's one. Frosted Tips. Remember the everybody had the Frosted Tips?
Those. Never had them, but
You can't escape that hairstyle. We're looking at you, Lance Bass of NSYNC. Bleached and spiked hairdos were a thing for men then. The hairstyle was usually accompanied by baggy pants. Yeah. Oh, man. And how about some of the music of the 90s? There was the rise of the pop princesses, Britney Spears, Mandy Moore, Christina Aguilera, and more. Can't forget Beyonce's origins as Destiny's Child. And then Nirvana became a big deal in the alternative rock and grunge in general. You had Hootie and the Blowfish. You had U2, ska, punk, Alanis Morissette being angsty, NSYNC, Mariah Carey, Madonna, Garth Brooks, Backstreet Boys, 98 Degrees, Jennifer Lopez, and Thank You for Hanson for M-bop.
That was the big boy band time.
Yeah, late 90s.
Mid to late 90s. Yeah. Yeah. I got to tell you, when I was late 95, 96, we started the high school radio station at Evanston High School, and so we started to report what the kids were playing to, like, the music magazines.
Uh-huh.
One day I got a whole carton of CDs mailed to us. It was all of Baby One More Time.
Oh, God.
Like about 30 copies of it. The whole album, the whole CD, not just the single.
Jeez.
And so we gave those out on the air. That was...
I'm sure it was popular for that time.
Yeah, it was very popular, but I OD'd on that thing.
Butterfly hair clips is listed here. There are several versions of these. The single-color plastic ones and the extra-fabulous versions made out of metal that shed multicolor glitter everywhere. The best clips were the ones that were the wings were on the springs. And they have a picture here. I'm looking at a picture of Sarah Michelle Gellar with about 9 of them in her hair, the butterfly.
Does she look fly?
No, she does not. How about Bob Saget? We loved watching Full House and America's Home Videos and with our family and friends. He was a big part of the 90s. Bob Saget. You know what's really funny is that he was on Full House, which was this really, you know, like corny, wholesome family show. And then, of course, you know, America's Funniest Home Videos, which everybody watched on your Sunday evening. The whole family would watch it. And Bob Saget was the star of both of those shows. And then maybe... somebody would go, "Hey, I see that Bob Saget is playing at Zany's this weekend. We love him on Full House and on America's Funniest." I was going to say America's Most Wanted, America's Funniest Home Videos. Let's go see him. 10 minutes into his set, I had no idea how unbelievably filthy this guy was. Bob Saget works way blue, way way blue, which is why it's really funny. That, like, he was best known at that time period, best known for hosting two of the most popular family-oriented shows on TV, and he was filthy. All right, how about this? Crimped hair. That was a 90s thing. Yeah. I actually like crimped hair for some reason. Oh, Pogs. Now, did you ever get into Pogs?
No.
That was you were too old probably for Pogs at that point. They were collectible discs, Pogs, or Slammers. The Rachel Green hairstyle from Friends. I remember that was a big deal. How about thanks 90s for the date night movies?
Oh yeah,
the Titanic, Home Alone, Space Jam, Jurassic Park, Forrest Gump, Braveheart, Silence of the Lambs. Silence of the Lambs is not a date night movie.
What? Not unless you're sadistic.
I mean, what? The Sixth Sense, Saving Private Ryan. Saving Private Ryan?
What?
How is that a date movie? Your date's going to be traumatized first 20 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, I think they're just trying to tie in movies that you would go to in the 90s.
Okay. Mrs. Doubtfire, Mission Impossible, Men in Black, Independence Day, Star Wars, The Phantom Menace.
Because right there, I mean, I, you know, we smell our own, but like, seriously, what date am I bringing to episode one?
Yeah. Jar Jar would be your date. Yeah. How about Bop It? Remember that? Bop It. Twist It. Bop it. Yeah. Pull It. It was a game where I remember that.
It was more like Break It. You just get frustrated.
Throw it across the room. SNL did a really, really hilarious sketch involving Bop It, where you have to twist it and you have to pull it. And then as, you know, I can't remember what cast member it was. I think it might have been Sherry O'Terry or somebody in that regard, was playing with it, and the voice of the Bop It, Twist It, Pull It, kept getting more sexually aroused. What was happening?
I think that was Sherry O'Terry. I remember that. Yeah.
Furbies. Creepy. They had their own little language. They talked to each other in the middle of the night. So I remember one of the first big things that I know was sort of spread on the internet was someone did an autopsy of a Furby. So they like cut one open so you could see what was inside. You could see what was inside. That was one of the first kind of things that people were sending to each other. How about sweaters tied around the waist? That's not exclusively a 90s thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it was because like it was definitely the grunge people did that. I used to do that.
I'm saying it wasn't sweater. They were Henleys.
It was usually
or flannel.
A flannel. It was usually a flannel. That's what I would wrap around my waist. I went through the grunge phase. I had really, really long hair. I wore the flannels. I wore the docks. So, how about sock'em boppers? These were big inflatable boxing gloves that you would put on and punch each other in the face.
Yeah, I never had. Neighbors did.
Yeah.
I might have broke them.
Says more fun, more fun than a pillow fight. I don't know about that.
Oh, they just hit harder.
Yeah. Let's see. 708 area code says, what I remember most about the 90s was being addicted to the Spice Girls. Yeah.
Yeah.
Spice Girls were pure 90s. You know who the biggest Spice Girls fan in the universe is?
Who?
Emma Stone.
Really?
Yep. And guess which Spice Girls, guess which is her favorite Spice Girl? One of them is named Emma.
Yeah, okay.
So it's a Baby Spice.
Yeah, okay.
I like Scary Spice. Scary Spice was always my favorite. Playing GoldenEye on Nintendo 64.
Yes.
Being jealous of Leonardo DiCaprio in Titanic, still one of the most overrated movies of all time. Screw you, James Cameron. I want my money back, and take that Oscar back while you're at it. Wow.
Yeah, wow. There's
this guy's got a chip on his shoulder.
You know, to this day, I still haven't watched it.
You haven't seen Titanic?
Nope.
He's not alone.
You know, you haven't seen Titanic?
No, I've seen little bits of it, but no, I haven't seen it.
What?
Yeah, I know.
This is insane because Dan Shugrue, my former producer Dan Shugrue, has never seen Titanic, but he loves the song. My Heart Will Go On.
I can't stand the song anymore.
Oh, he loves it. Absolutely, and it's not ironic. He doesn't like it, you know, ironically.
Mm-hmm.
He legitimately loves that song, but he's never seen the movie. And so I remember one night we were talking about Titanic. This was years ago, and I was working with Dan. I was working with Andy at the time, Andy Herman, and Paula Cooper was doing news in the newsroom.
Mm-hmm.
We started talking about Titanic, and this was, you know, maybe seven, eight years after the movie came out. It came out in 97, so it's like 7, 8 years afterwards. And they both started screaming about how terrible it was. Like, they hated Titanic. And Andy never saw it. He's like, I'm not even going to bother. And here's the thing about Titanic. I don't want to sound like I'm being the biggest Titanic defender of all time. All right? But because it's too long. It's way too long. The movie's way too long. And the first hour goes by like, you know, like an hour and 15 minutes goes by like molasses. And I didn't care about the love affair. I didn't care about DiCaprio. I didn't care, you know, but once, let me say something right here, man. Once that ship hits the iceberg and it starts to sink, it kicks ass. That movie is exciting and scary and suspenseful. The special effects are great. It just takes a long time to get there, you know?
Okay.
But once that iceberg hits, baby, it's fantastic. And I'll tell you something else. But now I'm going to sound like the biggest Titanic fan in the world. It didn't even make my top 20 that year. But here's the thing about it. There's a brilliant storytelling style to this movie. There's a really brilliant hook to the storytelling. The movie is told in flashbacks, in case you don't remember. Gloria Stewart played the old version of Kate Winslet, who they would go back in flashback. In present day, Bill Paxton plays a guy who's running an operation to go underwater to find the remains of the Titanic. And so they bring her on, Gloria Stewart, because she had firsthand knowledge of what happened, you know, on the Titanic, and they wanted to get the story as they were doing this. So he's explaining to Gloria Stewart, Bill Paxton, how the ship sank, what exactly happened, why it broke in two, and why this happened. And they do it via, he does like a presentation, and he shows a video of what happens when it hit this. The water filled up here, it did this. So you know exactly what was happening to the ship after it, when it hit, and after it hit the iceberg, just by watching this presentation. So that later in the movie, when it does hit the iceberg, Cameron does not have to stop the action to explain to everybody what's happening in the ship and what's going on and why it's sinking.
I gotcha.
It's a brilliant piece of storytelling so that he does not have to stop at all. It is relentlessly paced. The last like 90 minutes of that movie, after that iceberg hits, doesn't have to stop any action. Doesn't have to have somebody explain what's going on with the boat. It's just everybody trying to get the hell off the ship, and you already know, because earlier in the movie you know exactly what's happening to this ship after it hit the iceberg. That to me was a brilliant piece of storytelling. Just so he could make that last half hour or hour and a half just about, you know, about the intensity of the ship sinking. Then that added to why that last, you know, once it hits that iceberg, I mean, it really kicks ass. So now I sound like the biggest Titanic fan in the world.
I mean, now maybe I'll sit down with Bridget.
It takes a long time to get there. I'll be there. I'll give you that. There's tons of cliches and over the top characters, and the love story is not very interesting, and I didn't really care about all that crap. But once that iceberg hits the ship, it rules. So, all right, we got a break here. We got some weather, and we got more 90s stuff to talk about. We'll wrap it all up here on 720 WGN. Today, mostly cloudy and chilly. High again near 30. Tomorrow, cloudy, light snow will end after about a half inch or so into Friday morning, and then a high of 36 for Friday. Cloudy and windy, rain, chance of thunderstorms later in the day on Saturday. For Sunday, clouds will dissipate, be much colder with a high only in the mid-upper 30s. And then on Monday, mostly cloudy, a few flurries possible in the morning, the afternoon high near 40. It's currently 18 degrees at O'Hare. It's 20 at Midway, 21. At the lakefront. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll wrap up the show and wrap up all the 90s talk after this. I love this song. That's it for it's our last Triple Play Thursday. And again, I would like to say, exceptional taste in music for the Triple Play Thursday requests this morning. And lots of varying genres, too, that we played this morning. That's Brian Ferry, and he rules. Triple Play Thursday, yeah! It'll return next week. Okay, we were talking about 90s stuff, and of course Titanic came up because that's, you know, one of the quintessential 90s movies. Here's Trucker Rich on WGN. Hi, Rich.
Hey, good evening, Nick. I know you guys are short on time, so I'll be real quick. But
yep.
Back over the Christmas break, they did a Mythbusters marathon.
Oh, yeah.
And I happened to turn it on when they were doing the Mythbusters show, and they proved that Rose was a stingy little broad.
Oh, yeah, because he could fit on the door. There's no way he wouldn't be able to fit on that door.
Right. They made an exact replica of the door, and they showed it in a swimming pool how he could have got on the door with her.
Right.
And she let him drown, and right. then pined over his drowning.
Yeah. No, I tell you know what, it's so funny because that's been a bone of contention now for years. But hey, move over, Rose. There's plenty of room on that door for DiCaprio.
Yeah, and they did it in a swimming pool.
That's hilarious.
With people that were of the same weight and height, and then they did it with bigger people too, and they proved it could do it.
Yeah.
So,
by the way, I love MythBusters. I love those guys, man. That show rules. That's a great show.
I like the final season when they're really blowing stuff up, like 10,000 pounds of dynamite in a cement mixer.
That was funny because if they were doing some testing, it was like, well, at least we can blow some stuff up, even if it doesn't go our way. You know, even if we don't bust a myth or anything, at least we blew up a bunch of stuff.
Oh, they got sued once too.
Did they?
Yeah, they built a homemade cannon and were firing cannonballs, and it went farther than it should have, and it flew out of the range they had. And went into a house like a half a mile away, and they got sued. That's why they had to start doing everything in a rock quarry or a bomb squad with the police there.
That's so funny. That is so funny. I love those guys. All right, Rich, thanks for the call, buddy. Right.
Yep, have a
take
good
care.
Evening.
You take Bye-bye. Care. James is in Quincy on WGN. Hi, James.
Hey, Nick, how you doing?
All right, man.
I had a question from your screener. Was it that the 90s were the inception of the adult animated series, like The Simpsons, Batman, the animated series?
Yeah. Family Guy, all that stuff. Yeah, Family Guy debuted in 99. It was right after the Super Bowl in 99, I remember specifically.
I don't know, had you mentioned the Living Color?
In Living Color. Oh, absolutely. That show ruled.
Right. Fox literally ruled the 90s. Yeah. I have to give it to them. Hats off to them.
Yeah.
Between the Living Color, you had Martin, you had Living Single.
Yeah.
You had, The Simpsons, Family Guy.
Yeah.
All of those, Fox ruled the 90s.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, James.
Have a good one.
All right, buddy. Take care. All right. I'll wrap this up with some texts here. Speaking of animated stuff, 630 area code says Beavis and Butthead, best cartoon ever. Beavis and Butthead is the work of a genius. We talked about Office Space a little while ago on the anniversary of Office Space. Mike Judge, Beavis and Butthead is so great. And I've talked about this before. We watched my buddies and I, when I was living with my buddy Scott, I had a whole bunch of people come over and we brought a bunch of beer because MTV was doing what they called the Moronathon. And it was 8 straight hours of Beavis and Butthead. And we watched 8 straight hours of Beavis and Butthead. We sat on the couch, we drank beer. And we watched 8 hours of Beavis and Butthead. And let me say something right now. After about 2.5-3 hours of Beavis and Butthead, you become Beavis and Butthead. I just want to make sure everybody knows that. You absolutely transform into Beavis and Butthead. Love those guys. Let's see. I was born in 1970. I had a fanny pack for some time. It was a lot easier than putting my wallet in my little black book and other... My little black book?
Do guys still have a little boy?
Well, I was born in 1970, so I'm assuming that, you know...
Playboy was still around then, so,
little black book. let's see. Did anybody mention All That on Nickelodeon? Oh, no. Nobody mentioned All That. That's Doug who said that. How about in the 90s, Tickle Me Elmo?
That came out then?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, late 90s. Game Boy and Tetris, that was mentioned. We mentioned the Tamagotchi, the handheld electronic creature that you had to feed and clean up after and everybody killed him. How about Blink 182?
Yeah. When they were still good.
Jimbo says, I saw a commercial last night showing Bob Saget coming back with a new show starting next week. Okay. The 90s also gave birth to Toy Story. Yeah, Pixar began in the 90s.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. 765 area code. This is Dave in Lafayette, Indiana. My wife and I actually went to see Leaving Las Vegas on our anniversary. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. After a great steak dinner. Big mistake. We still talk about it today. What a great movie to not see on your anniversary.
Hey, honey, let's go see Leaving Las Vegas. My God. The Pepsi Cool cans. And how about 847 says Herman's Head TV show. Yeah. All right. That's the 90s, everybody. It's nice to see Bob Saget's making a comeback. You know what Bob Saget was really funny on? And he got to be, you know, vulgar and dirty like he does in his act. He was great on Entourage.
Yeah.
He was playing himself. He was hilarious on Entourage. So.
His roast was one of my favorites.
Yeah. Yeah, it was hilarious. It was really hilarious. So, all right. Well, there you go. And it's a Thursday morning. Everybody have a great one. We'll be back tomorrow morning, which is Friday. We'll have all of our regular features, which is You Big Dummy, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, and then Fly Jams Friday. That's all coming up, along with our consumer man, Herb Weissbaum, to help you out with any consumer issues you have and tries to keep you from getting scammed and all that stuff. That's all coming up. Starting at 1 a.m. tomorrow morning. We'll take a break. The news is coming up after this. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow morning with all the regular Friday features and more.